go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Remember how, I guess it was Monday night since I played hooky last night. You remember how Monday night Kevin from Brooklyn said, I just can't imagine the voters of Massachusetts will put that wing nut in there or something to that effect. And I said, Kevin, I really, really, really want you to be right and me to be wrong. Well, sorry, Kevin. That really sucked. And among the things that sucked was the fact that Martha Coakley, as Brad Friedman noted, gave up faster than any other human being conceding an election in the election history, with the possible exception of the guy who ran against Saddam. And that's pretty quick. I don't know if you have had enough of the recriminations and the hand-wringing for today. Your phone calls will tell me that. But I have. Early today over on Facebook, and by all means friend up and participate in the discussion as we post things throughout the day. Feel free to. It's one way to sort of keep the show going 24/7, if you will. I posted a link to a Wall Street Journal. Remind me to talk about the New York Times, clueless bastards. Wall Street Journal opinion piece by Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis, former special counsel to President Clinton from 1996 to 1998. There's no basically to it. It's a matter of what he did or did not do. And what he did is he penned an editorial op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal, that right-wing rag. I mean, it is. I mean, it just is. So, one, why Lanny Davis is writing for the Wall Street Journal is subject to question. Any port in a storm, I guess. But the title of the piece was "Blame the Left for Massachusetts," and the subheading, and of course, you know, you don't necessarily get to title your op-eds, but still, the subhead was "Democrats should be willing to seek common ground reforms." And I read that before the first cup of decaf this morning, and it was no good. Peter Godbold once swore to me that he would not respond to anything before he had his decaf. Well, I probably should not read anything before I have my decaf, because I was Yosemite Sam and all over this studio. Blag, stag, and blue nose, not pull frazzleack and wreck slack, wasn't it, Nathan? The nerve of Lanny Davis to suggest that it is the fault of Democrats that Martha Coakley did not win that election. The nerve. He asks a question in this, and frankly, I think this goes beyond, well beyond, the issue of whose fault the Brown-Coakley election was. He says, according to polls, fears about the Democrats' health care proposal played a prominent role in Mr. Brown's victory yesterday. In the last several months, the minority congressional Republicans have dominated the message on health care and stamped on the Democratic Party the perception that we stand for big government, higher taxes, and health insecurity when it comes to Medicare. How is that possible? Lanny Davis asks. And I don't think it was rhetorical. I think he really doesn't understand. How is that possible, he writes. The Democrats have a simple message on health care that still has not really gotten through. If our bill passes, you never have to worry about getting or losing health insurance for the rest of your life. How is it that so few people have heard that message? And he goes on through the rest of the screed to blame Democrats for why it is that people, to blame the left for why it is people have not gotten that message. Well, if you will pardon me for just a moment, and we'll move forward after this, because there's a ton of stuff for prayer meeting tonight, and the pastor's warming up back in the parsonage. I got a message for Lanny Davis. It's a damn shame he can't hear it. You dumb bastard. You silly, stupid sod. How did it happen? How did we get beaten on the message? You ignorant fart breath, you're writing an op-ed piece in the Wall Street damn journal. Ask it again, how is that possible, Lanny? You're writing in the enemy camp, you stupid honest to God. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, all owned by corporate giants inimical to anything that is good for working America, and Lanny Davis has the unmitigated gall, the numbskull nerve, to ask how that happens. Oh, without a doubt, Martha Coakley ran a sort of ponderous and tone-deaf and mind-numbingly dull campaign. Granted, she 2 weeks before the election, she was attending a champagne campaign funding brunch in Washington, D.C., when she should have been knocking on doors somewhere in Massachusetts or attending a boiled cabbage dinner or whatever it is the local volunteer fire departments have there. Granted, all of that. But the right-wing message machine owned that election because it was the only election taking place in the United States. Then there were the two deals that put congressional Democrats in a worse light than the infamous Bridge to Nowhere, as impossible as that might have seemed, as an emblem of the special interest politics Barack Obama ran against. We Democrats had to explain to Massachusetts voters and other Americans why non-Nebraskans and non-union members have to pay more taxes while Nebraskans and union members get to pay less. Those two deals seem to have alienated most people across the political spectrum. That's not easy. No, Lanny, it was easy, because about 90% of what you just typed is a damn lie. It was easy, because ABC repeated it, Fox repeated it, CBS repeated it, NBC repeated it, all without the first damned inkling of determining whether or not there was any factual accuracy for your allegation. Non-union members have to pay more taxes? Bullshit. The threshold was the threshold. The Ben Nelson deal? Hey, that's Harry Reid. That's not the Democratic Party. Unless Harry Reid gets up every morning and says, le Democratic Party, c'est moi. And the rest of us believe it. And then this. this little bit of snide, sickening garbage. Somehow, in the last 12 months, we allowed the party of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama to morph into the party of George McGovern, or more accurately, his most ardent supporters. You filthy piece of garbage. Lanny Davis. You rotten, stinking piece of awful. George McGovern, a war hero, and you would slur him on the pages of a right-wing rag? May I remind you, Mr. Davis, that Bill Clinton, of whom you speak so glowingly, worked his ass off as a young man for George McGovern. And may I further remind you, Mr. Davis, that had this country not started taking those tormented steps down the broad primrose path to hell that is right-wing conservatism with Richard Nixon in 1972, there might be a whole bunch less names on that black granite wall in Washington, D.C. But then there's the parenthetical slur. Morph into the party of George McGovern, or more accurately, his most ardent supporters. One of those was Bill Clinton, Lanny. And Howard Dean, who called for the defeat of the Democratic health care bill if it had neither a public option or Medicare buy-in. He couldn't possibly have been speaking for the 31 million uninsured people in taking that all-or-nothing position. Well, in light of what the corporate health care bill does, he may very well have been doing so. There are a lot of people, Mr. Davis, if you would get out of your ivory tower, Washington, inside the Beltway existence, and talk to folks, you might find out that a whole lot of Americans aren't at all enamored with the idea of having their wealth transferred upward to the insurance companies via a corporate welfare scheme that is embedded inside the health care bill itself. You might find that out, Mr. Davis. And then the nerve to write this. Bottom line, we liberals need to reclaim the Democratic Party with the new Democrat positions of Bill Clinton and the new politics bipartisan aspirations of Barack Obama. You, Lanny Davis, are not a liberal. We liberals. Jesus, that's like when the great Philadelphia Phillies pitcher Robin Roberts used to say, switch hitters like me and Musial. We liberals. We liberals need to reclaim the Democratic Party with the new Democrat positions of Bill Clinton and the new politics bipartisan aspirations of Barack Obama, a party that is willing to meet halfway with conservatives and Republicans. Halfway? There has never been a damnable day, Lanny Davis, when the Repiglickens have been willing to meet us halfway on anything except the road to our own demise. Halfway my ass. If we extend an olive branch, we draw back a bloody stump. We met the Repiglickens halfway in the Senate when it was run by Bill the Cat Killer Frist to save the sanctity of the filibuster. And we are and wound up to our eyeballs in right-wing judicial, not activists, but extremists. There is data to suggest that the frustration in Massachusetts had nothing to do or less to do with the Tea Party than even I suggested. And everything in the world to do with the fact that liberal and progressive Democrats were not being liberal and progressive Democrats. If we offer them a choice of Republican or Republican light, they'll vote Republican. There has to be a branding difference if you want to talk marketing. There just has to be. Lanny Davis. Clueless. I mean, really, how can you not? Just clueless. But that kind of crap is all over the interweb tubes today. And frankly, I've had a belly full of it. If you want to talk about it, you're welcome to. But you know what? There's other stuff out there. Oh, brethren and sistren, is there other stuff out there today? Oh, glory! Because, of course, this here is Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday, brethren and sistren. But it is oh so much more than that. Yay, verily, glory! It's prayer meeting, brethren and sistren. Mr. Choirmaster, as we pass the plate, would you please lead us in the offertory hymn?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh! Hot set, Ralston on the rim, Ron, brawler, suet! Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang! I love you! Welcome, brethren and sistren, to the cathedral. Welcome, feel welcome in here as you come on down the blood-red carpet and get on your knees in front of the subwoofer, and lay your hands upon it here at the altar of the Cathedral of Common Sense, and feel that connection forming between you, the subwoofer, and the server of common sense, and the healing rays of reason just flow through you. Glory, glory, amen and amen. Oh, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, brethren and sistren. And we have work to do this evening. Yes, yes, the bidding on that Pat Robertson voodoo doll over at the eBay is way upwards over $1,000 now, but we're going to need more voodoo dolls, brethren and sistren. We got any voodoo doll makers in the congregation? Just gently motion, and a deacon will come over and take down your name for voodoo doll class. Because we're going to have to be making a lot of them. We could have an army of Rush Limbaugh voodoo dolls. And we're going to need a voodoo doll for somebody else. Somebody you've never heard of. Somebody who apparently heard the evil, venomous, herpetological speech pouring forth from the mouth of Pat Robertson and decided he wanted to get him in on the act, Glory. We're going to need us a voodoo doll for Dr. Wesley Stafford. Dr. Wesley Stafford is president and CEO of the ironically named Compassion International. And he had him a conversation with the Focus on the Family. And he said the following. Thanks very much to News Ninja Susan for passing this along. Hallelujah. Ha! Haiti has been a disaster in almost every way long before this ever struck. And it is a nation between you and me, I guess, that Satan has had absolutely free reign in that nation. And while the missionary effort and the church effort has been enormous, this is a nation that you can literally feel the evil in it. But then, as the church lives out its faith, having come through this deep, deep valley, my great prayer is that there will be a great wave of healing and change in the nation of Haiti that could only come about through an interruption like this and only through the glory of God. You know, when I was a little boy and the little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church were teaching me, they taught me a thing from Psalms, and I referenced it the other night on the program because it has stayed with me, yea, verily, from then until now. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament sheweth his handiwork. But to a sick, psychotic, psychopathic bastard like Dr. Wesley Stafford, the glory of God is shown when God murders tens of thousands of innocent poor people. You heard me. I didn't stutter when I read his quote. My great prayer is that there will be a great wave of healing and change in the nation of Haiti that could only come about through an interruption like this. No, it's not a massive social, cultural, and geophysical disaster. Hell no, it's an interruption that only happens through the glory of God. Any God that displays its glory by massacring women and children who are by far and away what Yeshua the brown-skinned itinerant Palestinian day laborer called the least among us. Any God who does that, I spit on. Piss on. I want nothing to do with a murderous, psychotic, psychopathic God that Dr. Wesley Stafford worships. Oh, by the way, what's the hustle of Compassion International? They collect money, $38 at a time, to help children in impoverished parts of the world. They have a child advocacy ministry that attends to the needs of more than 1 million children in 25 countries. They have found sponsors for 64,000 children in Haiti and have dozens of operating centers around the country. But of course, those children are evil. Because what did he say? This is a nation that you can literally feel the evil in it. I wish they'd stop feeling the children. What a sick gang. You know, don't trust me on this. Listen to your lying ears.
You had mentioned that you are going to be there in the aftermath of this, that you're not going away in a couple weeks. Talk about what that long-term vision of help looks like.
Yeah. Well, you know, Julie, Haiti has been a disaster in almost every way long before this ever struck. And it is a nation between you and me, I guess, that Satan has had absolutely free reign in that nation. And while the missionary effort and the church effort has been enormous, this is a nation that you can literally feel the evil in it. But then as the church lives out its faith, having come through this deep, deep valley, my great prayer is that there will be a wave of healing and change in the nation of Haiti that only could have come about from an interruption like this and could only happen to the glory of God.
Amazing how the Lord can triumph even in the face of what's such a terrible tragedy.
Exactly.
So I love that
and that's
vision.
Kind of how the kingdom of God.
But the problem is the Lord made that tragedy. What kind of triumph is that? But let's back up for a minute. See, I didn't cheat on that. I read you this clown's own words. But let's back up. I want you to hear what he follows up with about the kingdom of God or whatever. Whatever garbage, filth, whatever murderous, blood-soaked freakishness he's going to spew.
Exactly, and that's
vision.
Kind of how the kingdom of God works. You know, his strength is made perfect when we're weak.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for...
His strength is made perfect when we're weak. So does that mean that by taking our strength, that weakening human beings is what gives God his strength? I guess you could argue that it does. Because it's always the poor, it's always the downtrodden, it is always the most agony-stricken among us who find their way to some church hoping for some sort of magical intervention that will lift them out of the misery that is their existence. Oh, well, you got to eat the magic cracker, or you got to speak in tongues, or, you know, whatever. God, save us from your followers. Marty, I'm not sure who the woman behind the microphone was. She's somebody at Focus on the Family. And, you know, you may be right. I'm not sure that there is enough material in this universe for even one Limbaugh voodoo doll. But you know what? We ought to try. We need an army. We need an army of people just needling. So that next time those chest pains won't be a phony publicity stunt for Mr. Flimball. So that next time he won't, you know, after eating four chili dogs at the turn on the Wailea golf course, he won't be sitting there a few holes later, Elizabeth, this is the big one! Sick, monstrous bastards. Like I said, I have a sensation this is going to be a busy night because, you know, it is prayer meeting. And I'm going to the phones just in a minute. Be patient. Don't be hanging up yet. This thing broke on Monday night thanks to the hard work of Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. There are scopes on rifles. Thousands of rifles used by U.S. troops in combat. And the manufacturer, Trijicon Inc. of Michigan, say that they have been inscribing their Bible, they've been inscribing their scopes with Bible verses for literally years. Like JN812 as part of the serial number. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Another piece of optics has the inscription 2Cor46. You know, this is like the eye black under Tim Tebow's eyes, only fatal. 2 Corinthians 4:6. For God who commanded the light to shine out of darkness hath shined in our hearts, to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Oh, it goes on and on. And this is, you know, if they've been doing it for years, well, that includes the Bush administration, and of course they would have been approving of this. But not a peep was said. Not a peep was done. In this last year of the Obama administration, and this had to be discovered by the hard work and dedicated work of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. Mikey Weinstein has commented, he said he's glad to see that the Marine Corps say they're concerned, but he's not quite buying into the notion that the Marines didn't know anything about it. After initially signing a $7.5 million contract with Trijicon in 2005 for 6,000 optics, the Marine Corps then entered into an additional multi-year deal worth up to $660 million for as many as 800,000 800,000 of the scopes. The Marines saying that they, well, we didn't know. Mikey Weinstein said, and Mikey's a great guy. He said, it's like a husband and wife sleeping in a bed for 2 years and saying they weren't aware of the nest of rattlesnakes in it. And that's what these evangelical fundamentalists are. They are rattlesnakes. They are vipers. They are Gabon vipers. They are cobras. They are the most toxic and deadly. Can you imagine? Can you imagine inscribing scopes on rifles, engines of death and destruction, dismemberment, maiming, agony, inscribing those with the words relating to the Prince of Peace? Can you imagine? And what if the Iraqis find out? What if the Afghans find out that they're being shot at with Jesus guns? Oh, that's going to go over real well. You know, the funny thing is, this is not new. There have been on ancient Roman battle sites unearthed little lead sling balls. All right, no dirty jokes, you pervs. If I wanted somebody to laugh when I say balls, I would have Ferg back here in the studio with me all the time. Little lead balls with, and you know, soldiers have always messed with their equipment. And they've been discovered, for instance, in on battlefields in ancient Roman from ancient Roman context layers. The Roman army was frequently had with it elements from the Balearic Islands, and they were known for their abilities with a sling. You know, the kind of thing that David took down Goliath with. And the Romans were high-tech enough to cast the ammunition for them. And so these little lead balls would be distributed to the slingers, who would then individualize their ammunition. One was discovered once, I believe, that I read somewhere, that was inscribed in little teeny-tiny script. But it's lead, it's soft, and you can do that kind of thing. Here is one for your nose. But not things. And yeah, they carved on their spear shafts. But these were individual acts. How do you think a Muslim soldier, how do you think a Muslim or a Jewish Marine feels going into battle with John 1:8, or what the heck ever it was, John 8:12? Inscribed on, this is, and the right wing dares to say a word about voodoo? Pat Robertson dares to mention voodoo in the context of Haiti? This is the worst kind of superstitious talismanism. Now see, if we had a real government, a lawsuit would be filed. Because you see, these scopes are, these scopes, and I know it may seem a little hard to get your head around, but these scopes are unconstitutional. Because they breach the First Amendment, and they also breach the proscription of evangelicizing the military. Why should an atheist have to go into battle with some piece of biblical trash inscribed on his scope? Why should an agnostic? Why should a Buddhist? Well, I don't know if we've got any. Well, maybe we do. Why should a Muslim soldier, or a Jewish soldier, or a Native American soldier be forced to carry around proselytizing material? Because that's what that is. If we had a real government, every one of these scopes would be packed up and sent back to Trijicon. And then a lawsuit for every penny that was spent with Trijicon, because this is outside mil spec, okay? One of two things obtains with this story. Either the military approved of this, in which case heads should roll, so to speak, or the military really didn't know anything about it, in which case this is something done to the scope that is materially outside mil spec. And insofar as it is materially outside military specifications, every one of them needs to be sent back to Trijicon. Trijicon needs to be sued for the full amount of the contract plus the replacement cost for all of these scopes. Trijicon should, in other words, be put out of business yesterday. And I don't know why this would be... You know, I'm sure that, what was that creep's name, Wesley, whatever he was, I've already closed his tab. I'm sure he would be thrilled to know that civilians were being gunned down with Bible verse, by virtue of the use of scopes with Bible verses on them. But why are they monkeying around with John and Corinthians? Let's go back and get us some Old Testament murder and deathing going on. And yea, verily, let them all be smitten by the weapons of the Lord. I mean, let's get serious about this. Because after all, if it was Old Testament, then especially if it was coming out of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, or Deuteronomy, then the Muslims and the Jews could get on board with it too. And we'd just have ourselves a little monotheistic murder force. No, see, son, see, you can just imagine the old gunnery sergeant. See, son, what you want to do when you got your little Muslim kid running across there and you're pretty sure he's wearing a dynamite belt, what you want to do when you're carrying your John 8-12 rifle is you want to lead him a little bit, son. You got to lead him a little bit. And there's more. Like I said, this is going to be a busy night. From Corey in Louisville. That clip you're playing now, that lady doesn't even hesitate. She goes on like there's not a damn thing wrong with what he said. That's the thing, Corey. In the world of the Christians, the evangelical, fundamentalist, radical Christians, there isn't anything wrong with saying that God done good by murdering thousands and thousands of innocent Haitians with his earthquake. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not only not wrong, it's right. With regard to Massachusetts, Corey also added, this race should never have been in doubt. The Democrat should have won easily if she put some work in this race, and she didn't even do that. But what makes me even madder is that this race should never have been a factor in passing health care. And did you hear what chinless Addison Mitchell McConnell, our Humana, said today? No, I didn't, but I have a feeling I'm about to. Oh, dear. The American people want us to stop this process and start over. What American people, Addison? The American people in Massachusetts who already have universal health care? The American people whom you allegedly represent in Kentucky, where we are in the bottom five in terms of health, where we have something like a 30-cent cigarette tax on a pack of death sticks? Or the Americans whom you've sold your black, slimy, cold soul to in the real death panels called the health industrial complex? This process should have gone through by reconciliation, and if the bill got 61 or 60 votes, that would have just been the cherry. I have absolutely no idea, says Corey, who put out the meme that the Democrats had 60 seats and could therefore thwart Republicans. See, I'm learning filibusters, because there are at least four Dinos in the Senate now, and no Lieberman isn't included in that list. But because the Obama administration craves bipartisanship over doing good government, and Harry Reid is a feckless milquetoast pussy jellyfish scared of his own shadow, this bill that has wasted 7 or 8 months of time just to get the vote of every corporate Democrat bought off by the healthcare industry or the vote of Queen Olympia, the first, is going to fail. It is going to fail spectacularly. spectacularly. How in hell is it possible that the Senate Minority Leader is not only controlling the Senate business, but he is nominally in charge of it? And what's worse off is that there is some good Democrats in the House that are going to pay for the sins of the undemocratic Senate and weak Senate leader. I took note, Corey says, that of the 40 Senate seats up for grabs this year, 19 are held by the other party. But with the outrage of people at the Obama do-nothing government and the Senate know-nothing leadership, I fully expect every single one of those people to make their return to the Senate, along with a few more right-wing colleagues. The one race where I wouldn't mind a Republican pickup is Nevada. The people of Nevada will be doing this country a great favor by sending someone to the Senate not named Harry Reid. This all could have been avoided had the Obama administration simply said from the start, Harry, get it done. Work with the Republicans only if they will work in good faith, otherwise ignore them and treat them as the Bush administration and Republicans treated you when you were in the minority. But do it and do it now. And the sad part is that I don't think that the White House gets it yet with the corporate Clinton DLC Democrats that Obama has surrounded himself with. And then this comes in from Al. Bob, I'm glad you're not railing against the filibuster like Coase and other liberals, because that misses the real story of what happened in Massachusetts. I don't want to say anything discouraging, because you need positive input from your fans like me. On one of those liberal blogs, I recently read about a poll which showed that voters trust predatory capitalists more than they trust our federal government. Only an actual financial collapse could have changed this sentiment, but the collapse was averted, and anyway, it might have been too terrible a price to pay for getting through reform. The bottom line is that although voters want health reform, they insist on the impossibility of getting it without government intrusion. For an old 60s hippie like me, this week's election means surrender to the gradualism that has been the story for half the century I've been politically aware. The brighter part of this gradualism is that this week I read about our government being in the process of pulling back from the war on drugs in Latino countries, and the report described this war as collapsing. Besides that, legalization of pot has the same 56% in approval in California that it had in polls for the medical initiative that in fact passed with a 56% vote. Al says, I stopped my own pot consumption 20 years ago, but I have hope that the decriminalization of drugs could reduce the pernicious influence of the conservative police element in our society. So I'm hanging my optimism on the reported moribund condition of the war on drugs. I hate to say this because I consider myself a super liberal, but it seems to me that Coakley, by calling Kurt Schilling a Yankee fan, confirmed that many Democratic politicians probably are in fact dreadful liberal elitists. In other words, arguably clueless idiots. Al says, my best to you. I'll send you a small donation this week, a small one because I'm on an inadequate fixed income, and I already give to others such as Leo Laporte, Doctors Without Borders, and Digby, all of whom need it. Don't sweat it, Al. Don't sweat it. We'll figure out a way. I appreciate the words. I really do. For Massachusetts, there is blame enough to go around and time enough to sort it out. And people keep saying, will Obama figure it out this time? Will he get it? I'm not trying to be a nattering nabob of negativity, but I don't think so. Because like Corey said, he's surrounded by people who see this as the fault of the left. Lanny Davis? Really? Massachusetts is my fault? Because I want everybody to be able to go to the doctor? And because I don't feel like it is the purpose the requirement or the necessity of the American people to provide corporate welfare for the insurance industry? Really, Lanny? So there you go. I've babbled on long enough. It's about a quarter before the hour here on the horn. And let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. Sorry, man.
I'm tired of being Charlie Brown.
Yeah, it sucks a little, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I thank God every day I graduated from City College in New York. Instead of wasting my money going to the so-called Athens of the New World, Boston and Massachusetts, where they make if that's the end result of the intellectual hub of the new world, then you know what? You're wasting your time and money.
I don't think, Kevin, that it's entirely that simple. The Lottie sent me the precinct by precinct map of Massachusetts and noted that the teabaggers even carried Hyannis, if you can imagine.
Wow.
And that should tell you something. This was time travel. This was 2004 all over again, where people thought if we're just a little more like the Repiglicans, why they'll love us more. People want a clear people want a clear choice, Kevin, not Republican versus Republican light.
Well, they've played that playbook to death.
When did you ever see the Washington Generals haul out a full court press on the Globetrotters?
That is true. Oh, God. You know, oh, boy. I just cannot believe, you know, and the feat of the late, great Senator Edward Moore Kennedy going to this clown.
But it's gonna, unless that bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky decides to do a little justice for a change and, you know, drops a big rock or a lightning bolt or something on him. And frankly, if I was going to bet on something, I'd go and buy my lottery ticket before I bet on that happening.
The only thing I can foresee is that what's happening is one of the Kennedy clan is gearing up to 2012.
Yeah, see, that's too much nine. I'm so done with nine-dimensional chess, Kevin. I'm so done with it.
You know, me too. You know, oh boy. Anyway, but like I said, I'm done with playing Charlie Brown. You know, I figured give it one last shot.
Yep, ain't kicking that football no more.
Exactly. You know, and this is what, you know, the Pat Robertsons thrive on. People keep on going for the football to kick in.
But how are people, you know, I guess this is by way of a little bit of promotion, but next week Guy James and I will be in Washington, D.C. at a conference on health care, and we'll be broadcasting live. And there is no more important issue than health care for every American in this country. No more important issue.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But recognizing that, why is there not some massive summit taking place about media in this country? I'm sorry to return to my same old broken record, but whether it's health care, the environment, working, labor rights, what have you, Kevin, none of it is going to get across to the American people until we do something about the way that media are structured in this country and the right-wing death grip around its throat.
Well, the thing is, again, like Deep Throat said, follow the money.
Yeah. You know, Lanny Davis wants to blame us wild-eyed McGovernite lefties. Well, hell's bells, when did we take over the New York Times? When did we take over Fox? When did we take over CBS, ABC, or NBC? When did we do that, Kevin?
Well, remember the conversation we had 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
There is room for debate, but it's going to be controlled and manipulated debate.
For so long as media remains structured as it is in the United States, that is the absolute truth.
Yeah.
You know, thank you, Bill Clinton, very, very much for the media ownership, the media ownership dropping that rule. Look what it bought us.
You know,
I've heard a couple of quotes along the way, and I'm not one of those people who just hates Bill Clinton out of hand. I don't. You know, I don't even like to say, you know, best Republican president we ever had. I don't even do that. I have respect for the man. I really do. But I've heard a couple of times when he complains about the right-wing media, and daggum if he didn't take what was bad in the first place and make it worse with that rule change. I mean, come on!
Yeah, well, you know, it's like we all got to go down to, well, it hasn't happened to me yet. And I'm still relatively a young guy, so are you. But we all have to go to that crossroad, if you know what I'm saying. And Bill Clinton, unfortunately, did. And he chose.
Well, he was trying to work at it. Look at that, whether it's welfare reform or don't ask, don't tell, or this media business, it was all compromise with a right-wing Congress, because he was doing what Barack Obama claims to want to do. He was being bipartisan with a bunch of thugs. And honest to Jesus, you cannot be bipartisan with thugs. What good is a majority if you are?
Exactly. And the thing, you're absolutely right, and this is why to this day, you know, you cannot compromise with snakes. You cannot reason with snakes. You cannot compromise with snakes. And these people are a bunch of snakes. What do you do with a snake? You get a machete and cut it in half.
Yeah, and you wait till sundown before you touch it, because they don't die till the sun goes down.
Exactly. Because they will have enough in them to poison. And this is why, to this day, even though I don't know who this person is, but I will always have a soft spot for Giuliani. It's because when he was mayor, he did cut down on crime.
Yeah, but at the expense of Abner Louima?
Well.
And Amadou Diallo?
Well, like I said, I never said Giuliani was a nice guy or a good guy. But again, you know, you need a wolf to catch a wolf. And yeah, those were tragedies and all that. But like I said, I don't have, you know, I'm not a Giuliani fan. I only said I have a kind of a soft spot.
Understood.
Huh?
Yeah, understood.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I don't know who the person is who's, you know, hustling the National Republican Party. But Giuliani, when he was mayor, did do some good. And his presence did cut down a lot of, you know, crime, street common thug crime in New York City. And the thing is, you cannot govern chaos. The only thing you can do is eliminate chaos, and that's what he did. Now, other New Yorkers and especially other black folks will say, well, this is stuff Dinkins implemented and he took credit for. That might be true, but Dinkins, his presence was just, you know, too, in my opinion, a bit too soft.
That's possible.
For Dinkins.
Possible.
But look.
But I've got to roll on, Kevin. I've got six lines stacked to the wall. So
okay, brother.
Thanks, brother. Have yourself a good evening. All right.
Okay, then. I wish I was wrong, though.
Yeah, I know.
I wish I was right.
Yeah, I wish I was wrong and you were right. Later, Kevin. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Reverend Bob.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Well, I've been listening to the. I was listening to none other than Bob Kincaid here on the stream, and coming through nice and clear, and then there was suddenly divine intervention, and it switched over to some computerized music, and it went to silence. I thought, anyway, I'd try to call and let you be aware of this. You do speak clearly from the good book, according to Head-On, when you speak of the evil that is in our country and in our government. I think that it's coming through loud and clear. And it has to again make me think, what just happened to us in Massachusetts? These same high-tech people that can do this to me on my computer, what is to prevent them from interfering with, and let's say they...
Well, but the problem is, even if they did... even if they did monkey with the machines, Dave, there was no chance. I mean, Brad Friedman nailed it to the wall. Coakley conceded before a single ballot had been counted. You know, Brad noted this. She conceded before a single ballot had been seen by a single human eye, before it had been touched by a single human hand.
Well, I don't know, Bob, if it's possible for me to get a thought across to you that I'm dealing with very directly and have been for a long time here, and that is that even in the primary, the same goons that can interfere in the final election can select for us who will be the candidate that they want us to have represented. I truly believe that even in our presidential candidate, most all of the thinking Democrats I knew said, my first choice is Dennis Kucinich, and even if he looks a little funny and has pointed ears, he's the man that's representing what I want. That was everybody. But all the votes that were going cast for Kucinich ended up being cast for Hillary and for Obama. And that second choice was then Edwards before his scandal. And all the votes that went to Edwards ended up for Obama and for Hillary. I believe this, and I think they...
Well, it's hard to get around, if you remember that Soldier Field rally in Chicago early in the primary process, Dave. It was hosted, I believe, by the AFL-CIO, CIO or SEIU. Too many initials, too many vowels. But of all the people who got up and spoke at that rally, only one person brought that entire stadium to its feet. Barack Obama didn't. Hillary Clinton didn't. John Edwards didn't. Chris Dodd didn't. Dennis Kucinich did.
And I think every thinking Democrat that I know of, including you, me, all of your whole head-on crew, everybody was saying, Kucinich is our first choice. He stands for everything that we're
but,
about.
But please understand that we are not emblematic or indicative of the so-called mainstream. That's, you know, why this program struggles from month to month, and that's why this program's heard on the Internet. That's why we're not on terrestrial radio, because we are the liberals of the liberals. We're the real ones. We're the ones that are dyed in the wool.
You are the real ones, and I value you immensely, and when I'm able to listen to you, when I'm permitted to, I do so, it's more than just a divine intervention. These high-tech goons, wherever they're located, can go in and interfere with anybody's computer and do it and play the games that they want.
Well, you know the FBI got busted, right? Or has been at least found out.
Well, busted, yeah. That's
the FBI illegally collected more than 2,000 U.S. telephone call records between 2002 and 2006 by fraudulently invoking terrorism emergencies that didn't exist or just by persuading phone companies to give up the records. And that comes from the FBI's own internal memos and interviews.
Well, I think they came up several million short in their count of their abuses.
I don't contest that in the least, Dave. Dave, it's good to talk to you, but I'm gonna try to keep rolling on here. I'm so glad that you are getting to listen.
I am for the moment. Stay with it, brother. You will do a wonderful thing.
Thank you, Dave. Take care.
Bye
now. From Northern California, that's our buddy Dave, and keeping it going here. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
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 Yes, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay, great, man. This is Gary.
Hey, Gary. Yeah, I thought that was you.
Yeah, I was kind of moving around, and I said, let me check in with Bob. You know, I said I wouldn't make any analysis of a thorough analysis or criticism of Obama until after 1 year. So guess what the day is?
We're there.
So here we go.
All right, lay it out, Gary.
First bad move, Rahm Emanuel. Second bad move, Tim Geithner. Third bad move, this is a little tricky. Third bad move was, I'll take that back. The third bad move is not actually that bad. It's more on us, but trying to be bipartisan. Those really, to me, the core three things that he made a mistake on, in my opinion, in his first year. Everything else, I think he did okay. I mean,
What about not pursuing the excesses and criminality of the Bush administration?
I would say that is really the point of Eric Holder. Yeah, he can lean on him. So, you know.
Or he can tell him to lay off, too.
Yeah. So I that's something I think within, you know, how that really works. It's really up to the prosecutor. You know, he picked the guy, you know, whatever, but it's kind of up to him. I don't know if I put that much on him because Nancy Pelosi had already kind of laid the framework for that already coming in. And I think if we were going to go after George Bush, we really should have went after them when they found out the information, when the plate was hot. To have a president come in with the mess that Bush left, try to prosecute. So that's why I kind of like that. I kind of, even though I know a lot of people jump up and down for it, I mean, in the end, I think that we missed that boat. We should have did that when we had the chance. And, Nancy and those guys blew that. And I think we're paying the price for that now. With a weak Democratic Party.
Well, Gary, let me ask you, where the healthcare issue is concerned, we all know about the big meeting early on with Big Pharma.
Rob Emanuel.
You were ready.
Mm-hmm.
You think that that was orchestrated by Rahm and that
he's a corporatist. I mean, you know, I guess I spent a little short time when I first came into Washington with the DNC, and then I know how corporatist they are. And the one thing, I mean, you know, a lot of people know this. I mean, he tried to take credit, you know, when we had to, you know, Howard Dean's 50 Straight strategy. That's the reason why I even got involved in politics recently. I mean, I've been in and out, but it was because of Howard Dean. I mean, he was always my guy. You know, I like Dennis Kucinich, but I knew that there was a certain limit to him. But Howard Dean was always my guy. And that's why I got involved. Well, when Howard Dean got here, you know, like all of them, they got kind of swarmed up. But Howard Dean put the 50 state strategy in. If Howard Dean was the DNC president right now, we wouldn't have lost Massachusetts. Let's be honest.
Well, I have not even dared go there, but, you know, I knew that, I thought that there was something nefarious at work, Gary, when I got up this morning before my decaf. And I read Lanny Davis's little, it's the left's fault screed on the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
It was too much to take too early in the morning, A. And it was wholly untrue. And for somebody who is supposed to be as perspicacious as, Lanny Davis is, it seemed shockingly naive. But then again, he's a DLC-er, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's more like, when you get the DLC, you know, Democratic leadership, I mean, you get, you know, over there with Harold Ford and those guys. And they're more corporatist. They're very corporatist, but, I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, but the DNC right now, the DNC who's, you know, was headed by Terry McAuliffe, you know, once he left out, you had Howard Bush in a really a more kind of aggressive strategy. And that really kind of, you know, cause Howard Dean got, you know, shifted. So Howard Dean came in there and he laid the framework down for the Democrats to get all these sweeps going into, you know, to the last couple of elections. And now you got, I think Kane is in there now. I haven't been paying attention to it as much. But, you know, again, you know, Howard Dean was really building more of a framework. But you always had this corporatist in the, you know, DLC and the, and somewhat in the DNC. And the people like Lon Davis, you know, Terry McAuliffe, you know, Bill Clinton, you know, and those types. I mean, they believe in this Republican centrist right of center stuff, and they don't really realize that there are times when you have to go to your base, and really when you're in a, you know, a major combat, you got to go to your base. That's what George Bush did. He goes to his base, man.
Well, you identified Gary as number three on your list by partisanship, and you said that's kind of on us too. Well, it ain't on me, and it ain't on you.
No, well, it's on us because the one thing I do, I've kind of been seeing with this, and I've kind of sat back, and I said the one thing I've always found, you know, it's like an art of war of anything else. The problem with our analysis on the right and the left, on the left or whatever, this and this and that, we have a tendency to attack the top and just go after the top. We don't look at the ancillary things, you know. Republicans are not attacking, you know, they're going after Obama, they're saying whatever, whatever. But they're hitting us on the corners. I mean, if you're trying to run into somebody's fort, you're just not going to, you know, you're going to hit the ancillary sides, and you're going to try to break those down. And that's what they're doing with the little Tea Party rallies. They're going around us, they're circling us, and they're coming around and just nipping away. And then when they get a good shot, they'll take their shot at the main center of the thing. But what we have a tendency to do as the left, we don't tend to say, you know what, we're sitting here criticizing Obama every day, every day, every day. But nobody's talking about Ben Nelson. Nobody's talking about these moderates. Those moderates.
Well, easy with the
from day one.
Hey, Gary, easy with that nobody. Because
I'm a somebody.
I mean, I don't mean I'm somebody like, ooh, look at him. I mean, we've had plenty to dish out for Harry Reid, and we've had more than a soupçon for Ben Nelson and Mary Landrieu, and it has not been confined solely to Obama. But my question is, what does Barack Obama not understand about the nature of the Republican Party? How can you be there? I mean, is it because you shake hands with them and sit down and drink a cup of coffee with them or what or something like that, that you think that you're going to get along with them? After a year, I mean, this is the one-year analysis, and you're being true to your word, Gary. But after a year, what is it that Barack Obama can't figure out about the fact that that you can't be bipartisan with a snake?
Yes, I understand it, but what I'm saying to you is this. Is that, and that's why I said the announcement has to come out the 1 year, because even Bill Clinton says that. Bill Clinton said you really don't know the people you're dealing with in the situation. You have to give them the benefit of the doubt for your first year or whatever. And that's what you have to learn. You just have to do that in government. Whether you go on a job or anything else, you have to do that. But once they show who they really are to you, when you put a piece of legislation on a Grassley, Chuck Grassley or whatever his name is out in Iowa, you do that, then you say, okay, I know what you are, I see what you're about. Now, I see that you really are a snake. I thought you were a snake. Everybody said you were a snake. Now I know you're a snake, and I have documented evidence. So now you're crossed off my list. What Obama has to do now is start crossing people off the list who he can't work with, because they've already showed their hands. But so that's why I'm saying I'm a little 50-50, because I do think he had to play the hand to see who's in the room and what they're going to do. He might have really believed that Olympia Snow or somebody else was going to come over. But if anybody thinks that Barack Obama thinks that the Republican Party at this point is willing to work with him, I think we are being disillusioned. I think he very much got the message from them that they're not about working with him. They're about trying to bring his presidency.
So then, between now and November, because, I made the prediction a long time ago that as of January 1, getting anything done is over because it's an election year now. But does he come out swinging in the State of the Union? And secondly, how long did it take? I mean, I read a number today, and TSA Secretary Designee Southers has withdrawn his nomination. He has said Jim DeMented and Mitch McConnell and Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe are running the Senate on his nomination, and they've kept the TSA leaderless, right through an underwear bomber and everything, Gary. And in conjunction with reading that story, I read where 117, dig that number, 117 Obama appointees are languishing in the Senate because there are right-wing holds on them. Now, I just can't believe. I understand everything about, sort of settling in and figuring out who you're working with and what the dynamics are. But if you spend what was then a 2-year campaign running for the presidency, and you see the smears and the filth and the garbage that gets hurled, and you come into see, this is the part where that doesn't wash for me. When you see all this stuff, and then you what element, what last piece of the jigsaw puzzle is Barack Obama missing does he think that there's going to be some Annie moment and the sun will come out tomorrow and everybody's going to work together for the betterment of America? To my knowledge, and I'll soon be 47 years old, Gary, I have never once seen a Republican work for the betterment of America. Not one. Not one.
Everybody has a different vantage point. Our vantage point is different than his at this point. That's just a fact. And I think one thing that I understand what you're saying, the frustration, but we got to keep in mind that You know, I keep telling people this, you know, as much as we want to say, I've said this a thousand times, the mess that we got in is not Barack Obama's fault, it's the people's fault. The people who are in office are the people's fault. We elected George Bush twice. Now, he might have cheated or whatever, but still 50 million people put him in place, okay? These are elected officials who have constituency. They have their own little standing army, if you want to call them. So it ain't like Barack Obama controls that whole army. When you walk, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it don't work like that anymore. It just, I mean, it never did in our government. Bush and them can pull that crap. But with the Democrats, it's just not built that way. And that's why I said earlier, we should have been taking people off early, even while Barack Obama came to presidency. Because if we would have a public option, if we didn't have those four Democrats that we got sitting up there who really are Republicans. We don't have 60 votes. We've never had 60 votes.
But see, even with the 60, but Gary, even with the 60 vote thing, we're getting sucked into an untrue meme. There is no rule of the Senate that says it requires 60 votes to pass a bill. That is a Democrats only water fountain that the Republicans have created.
That's my criticism of the third criticism is the bipartisanship, because when I say bipartisanship, I'm also causing the process. I think Barack Obama is, and that's one thing I was thinking about today, is that he can't be so in love with government. Because one thing I know from reading his books and stuff, that he does love the way our government functions in terms of, you know, the way the Senate. I mean, he's enamored with that to some degree, and I think he needs to get over that, because my thing is, I don't care about the process. I just want to get something done. I don't care how you score the touchdown. Score the touchdown. You know, as long as you do it by the rules, within the rules, that's fine. So, I hear what you're saying on that, and I somewhat agree with you on that. But I also know that there's a certain kind of process, as you know.
You know, this thing could have, health care could have been done 7 months ago with reconciliation, couldn't it have?
It could have been done if Joe Lieberman just was out of the way.
But I mean, no. But with reconciliation, with reconciliation, it could be done on 51 votes.
Well, you know, Barack Obama came out today and said, you know, let the guy be seated. You know, he should be part of the process. He may be thinking in the back of his mind that we're going to do reconciliation, so he can sit down now because we don't care. Maybe that's what he's doing. Maybe he's thinking that he can go talk to this guy Scott Brown or whatever, because you know he said some stuff that's kind of. Doesn't seem totally Republican, so maybe he's going to get sucked into that wind and drag this thing out. I know what I would do, but
yeah, you know. Well, exactly. Gary, I really appreciate the one year analysis. Don't be a stranger, okay? It's been too long, my friend.
All right, man.
All right, you take care.
Peace.
Bye now. Gary, calling from Maryland, and true to his word, because this is that day. And, you know, it's kind of rainy and wet and miserable out here in the hills and hollers right now. And I was thinking about the one-year anniversary, and I was thinking about, you know, it was a year ago that I was freezing my butt off, trudging through the snow of the after-party of the inauguration in the streets of D.C. And what a difference a year makes. You know what I mean? Let's keep things going. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Sandra.
Listen, right. Well, all I know is Obama waves shift in health plans seeking GOP backing. That's what I see. That's what he's doing.
That sounds like a headline.
And he's also, yes, a headline for the New York Times. And he's also, another thing that he's about to do is he's set to appoint a deficit reduction panel. This is the next step.
I saw that. Oh, my God.
No, but the Fed, they're printing money, they're quantitative easing, but there's no tomorrow. You know what I mean? The debt is just exploding, which is true enough, but what are they going to do? Somehow they can't raise taxes on the rich. There's no way. The military budget is off the table, so they're going to have to cut Social Security and Medicare. The Nixon and China moment that I'm always going on about, this son of a bitch, and I'm sorry. I don't see nothing. I'm jaundiced about the whole process. Screw Obama. He wants to now roll this shit into a deficit reduction party? Come on.
Well, you know, it's. I'm really glad that you brought that up, Sandra, because I had a press release out from our friends at the Campaign for America's Future. And these guys have been pretty spot on for a while. And The press release simply says progressive leaders issue warning on formation of a deficit commission.
Well, no, and the thing is that, you know, the bipartisanship that, what was his name just called, Gary? That he said he was uneasy
Gary,
with.
Gary, yeah.
Yeah, damn Skippy. We all should be uneasy with it. The only person who don't seem uneasy with it is Obama. Okay, and this whole thing about, let's let him sit, let's not push anything through. Because what, he wants to do a reconciliation? Fantasy world. Do you think he's going to do that? No, hell no.
Well, first of all, that's Harry Reid's call, isn't it?
Oh, no, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, I see it going further right. I see more accommodation, not less. More accommodation. Now we're going to start gutting or going for that magical Social Security. I mean, please tell me I'm not going to live to see some Democrat in Social Security, Bob.
I can't tell you that.
No, but this is what I'm saying, and I have been mentioning this for a while now. I don't trust these MFers. I don't care. I'm done. The year's over with. The inauguration was great. But what I'm seeing right now is them getting ready with foundation money and Peterson and all these rich bastards to start hacking away at the last bit of safety net in this godforsaken country. I'm sorry. I'm just like, I don't know if Obama's weak. I don't know what the hell's going on. But I don't give a F. This is really frightening to me that they're going to give trillions away to all these industries and then come to us. Sorry, but we got to now end this Social Security program, and I'm going to do it, Barack Obama, because I'm a Democrat, and I can get away with it. I mean, you know, what's going on?
You know, I honestly don't know. It's clearly an outreach because, and it's an outreach toward that nebulous, disgusting bipartisanship that keeps being referenced, because just looking at this press release, Sandra, you know, this deficit commission proposal came from Kent Conrad and Judd Gregg.
Yeah, no, exactly. But the thing is, the deficit thing is also just a huge foundation-developed lie. After World War II, we were like at 140% of our GDP. Right now, we're at like 89. Okay, it's bad. But do you understand what I just said?
Yes.
We're not going to implode. You know, the deficit spending is what government does when the private sector has collapsed. Has the private sector collapsed, Bob?
That would be
Are
yes.
Are they spending money?
No, they're not.
Are jobs being created?
No, that would be no.
Okay, so what else do you have left but the government? I mean, please, please, please. Yeah, it's that
historical context too, Sandra. Dadgummit, you and I and many, many other people watched Paul Krugman predict this.
Oh, my God.
You know, we watched him point to 1937, and I can't forget, was it some guy named Marshall that pushed, or maybe it wasn't, but it was some clown who started shoving Franklin Roosevelt over the deficit when there was finally the beginnings of a glimmer of recovery from the Depression.
Right, and that was, yeah. No, I don't know who his name was. I know exactly. I mean,
it was his Secretary of the Treasury, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was some, you know, one of those freaks who any time, you know, the whole deficit panic. I mean, Japan is operating at 200% of their GDP at the moment. Now, I'm not saying this is good. It's not good, okay? But let's not get crazy here. We're at 89% or something like that. I'm just talking about what people need to find out what the hell is going on before we surrender to this these people who just want to end Social Security and Medicare. I mean, there's no other reason. They just want these programs gone. And the idea of Democrats doing this, it makes me sick, okay? And I know I'm sort of ranting a bit on edge, but, you know, damn.
Well, I don't think you're ranting, and I don't think you're on edge. The problem is that this calm 11-dimensional Vulcan chess approach that we've all been told to, you know, trust, and it'll be okay, and you know that's how this is going to be, and they're smarter than us, and it ain't working.
Well, no.
And we have a right to be on edge, and we have a right to be more than a little bit skeptical.
Well, no, and I agree, you know, with the, you know, with the conclusions that Gary came up with, except for I don't see Obama, you know, contrite about it. I see him going to the next stage, which is now we have to deal with this deficit, the deficit, you know, and it's just a bunch of BS, you know. I mean, I'm sort of stupefied by what seems to be on offer, you know. So the Democrats are going to cut Social Security and Medicare, and then they're going to run on that in 2012, or what?
Well, they will if they want to stop. You know, I maintain, Sandra, that Eisenhower was right in that letter that he wrote to his cousin or whatever in the 50s, where he said that any political party that advances the elimination of Social Security will cease to be a national party. And we saw that happen after the 2004 election. We saw that happen in 2006 and 2008 to the Republican Party. It's like the reverse of what Kevin was talking about with Charlie Brown and the football. This isn't Charlie Brown kicking the football that Lucy pulls away. This is Charlie Brown begging Lucy to pull the football away.
No, but it's just crazy because, see, the problem is that we have just seen, we've had a front row seat to the wholesale transfer of huge sums of money. And now we're going to have to take a front row seat and look at these fools try to convince us that, oh, no, we got to cut Social Security and Medicare because we're going broke? Are you effing kidding me? You have to look at Obama, talk about that in the State of the Union. I mean, the whole thing is just...
Well, see, that's the thing I don't trust. I smell this as being a State of the Union topic.
Oh my God, no! If they're gonna, not only is the deficit snoozeville, you understand what I'm saying? It is just not that exciting. And once again, for the Democrats to galvanize around that issue, oh my God! I mean, it is unbelievable how bad the Democrat Party can perform. It's stunning. I'm stunned. That election, all that was just. Unbelievable.
But yet at the same time, entirely believable when you consider the tone-deaf manner in which the thing was run.
No, it is. And I mean, I won't keep you too long, but I must touch on that, with that clip, with these people who see poor, desperate brown people and they automatically jump to Satan. The Washington consensus is a lot easier for these bitches to understand. How about trying that one?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because I just can't believe that woman, oh, yes, indeedy, with that gibberish that fool was talking about. What are you talking about?
You're the second or third person to note that it's not nearly, the part of that was not nearly as horrifying, coming from the mouth of that fundamentalist radical, whatever he was, phony Christian, but the woman sitting opposite him going, yes, yes, of course.
No, that's the same syndrome as that black chick with Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson, yeah.
It's stunning, and it's really terrifying. But I don't know. I just am sort of flabbergasted by the message that they seem to be getting from this. Now he's saying, oh, well, let's try to pass bits and pieces of it. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I have. And
around, but that one, I was laughing. I was rolling, thinking, "Wow, this is a real comedy now, a horror comedy." But
you know what? It's that in, and I hate to sound like I hate to just echo what's being said by other in other quarters, but it's the kind of thinking that goes on inside the Beltway, isn't it? You know, where the obvious logical conclusion to if A and B, then, you know, and the rest of the country is going C, if A and B, then C. And inside the Beltway, they come up with if A and B, then 12 and a half.
Well, no, but see, the choice that he wants to pass is, anything he's going to pass is not going to have any cost control. And the whole thing in Massachusetts is, I'm sorry, a lot of people aren't that happy with that BS healthcare they have, because that's also mandates without any cost controls, right? So all the young people think they're getting their pay taken from them for what kind of product. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that's been sort of underestimated inside the analysis of all of this. But by the same token, you know, like I said, Lottie sent me the electoral map of Massachusetts from Boston.com, and it is astonishing. I mean, to see the thing, with the exception of a little pocket around Boston and the very tip end of Cape Cod, you know, where it curls up like the curled up toe of the boot, and then it's all red. Except out, you know, out in the very western ass end of the state.
Yeah, it's like 2004, like you said.
Yeah, it's, and that's because, well, first of all, Lottie sent me another story about that was putting off voters, about this Martha Coakley woman. And maybe, I mean, there was a lot not to like about her. When Bob Lottie says, "I held my nose when I pushed the button, pulled the lever, marked this X, whatever." You know that there's a problem, because Bob is a rock solid liberal. But I think there's an analysis that Dave alluded to as well that needs to be engaged here, and that is the extent to which, you know, how did Martha Coakley become that nominee?
Oh no, she sounds really. I mean, and once again, she's also receiving how much money from the same, you know, rapacious corporate healthcare industries. I mean, I didn't see the whole list, but I mean, my God, it's like she's just another DLC person who don't know anything about sports. I mean, God, what a horrible combination.
Oh, you mean the Curt Schilling with the Yankees comment?
Well, that, and, you know, I guess she wouldn't go, she criticized hockey. I mean, you're in Boston, you dumbass, anyway.
It's
really
yeah,
sad.
But that's okay. We've got Scott Brown to juxtapose against her in delivering his victory acceptance speech and offering his daughter to the highest bidder. That was a nice moment.
Yeah, but he has to run again in 2012, right?
Right.
I mean, he seems like he's an unbelievable joke, and I just think it might have been anybody but the Democrats, and I know he ran a reasonable election because he actually appeared outside, did he?
Yeah, he campaigned.
Right, and she didn't. I mean, you know, she sounds like she was a bit of a mess.
But again, you know, we're talking about Massachusetts politics here, and Lottie would be a far better fact witness than I. But this is Massachusetts politics. This is the very epitome of Tip O'Neill, you know, get out the vote, go knock on the doors, talk to the ward healers, you know, the Kennedy machine, and with all of that, they got Martha Coakley?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's like most of the Northeast, you have a lot of room for retail politicking, right? And she didn't seem to even have a clue about how to even approach that.
I mean, this isn't, you know, it's been said that West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District is one of the hardest districts in the country to campaign in, because it literally goes from one end of the state to the other, and has very little media saturation and stuff like that. You know, when you get up in New England, that's not that. You can win seats in New England by going and knocking on doors and saying, "Hi, my name is."
Yeah, no, I mean, I looked at the map of that. I mean, there's so many. She obviously just. And the fact that the White House and the sort of current leadership didn't know what was coming down, that's another one that I can't really wrap my head around. It's, I mean, she didn't start running yesterday, did she?
No, she ran, again, I go back to that Washington Post article that said she had a 30-point lead and she ran her campaign accordingly.
Okay, well, yeah, but I mean.
She forgot that age-old maxim, or if she ever knew it. To wit, there are only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared to death.
Anyway, I just have to change the subject right quick. Listen, that business, my eyes are still burning from Obama standing there with Bush and Clinton appointing those people to prey upon Haiti again. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I did.
And that was disturbing because, I don't know if you saw it, but Amy Goodman is doing reports from Port-au-Prince. Good Lord, what is with the Army? I mean, do you know how much military we sit down there? Like, over 10,000.
Yeah, something on that order, yeah. And guess what? Most of them, many of them, have rifle scopes with Bible verses inscribed on them.
No, I can't even wrap my head around just how creepy and weird and horrifying that is. But once again, we're sort of militarizing a disaster where you call people who have no choice looters. I mean, the whole thing is really starting to, I just think I need to channel Zora Neale Hurston. If she could just show up for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, she wrote this book called Tell My Horse that was all about what goes on in Haiti. I mean, really interesting, you know, stuff about the voodoo and just the whole life in Haiti. But I'm just disappointed. I don't know what's going on there, except they're getting them ready for more neoliberalism.
And I think that's what it is. And what we still don't have, Sandra, I hate to beat a dead horse, is we don't have a single solitary soul standing up in government saying that the ultimate goal of these, you call them neoliberals, conservatives, arch-conservatives, whatever they are, their ultimate goal with their free marketeering and their Chicago School of Economics and their Friedman cultism and their anarcho-Randianism, that their ultimate goal is an entire continent reduced to the status of Haiti.
Yeah. And in the meanwhile, we have to hear from some religious freaks that they're like that because, you know, they covert with Satan. I mean, the simplicity of that is just so insulting. And, you know, God help the poor Haitians who have to depend on the likes of that, you know?
Yeah, I do.
It's horrible.
And well, wait, but there's one more funsy out there for you. I don't know if you caught this or not. This will be good for a scream. You know, we all know now from following what's going on in Haiti what a struggle it is to get water in. What a struggle it is to provide some base level of electricity, that there are aid organizations like the Cuban La Paz Hospital that are literally short on Band-Aids and sutures, okay? We know what the crisis nature of this is. Well, you will be pleased to know that thanks to Texas Betsy, our blogger, that an international group of fundamentalist Christians, so to speak, out of Albuquerque has provided, instead of water or medicine or bandages or generators or anything, no, they are sending boxes upon boxes upon boxes of solar-powered audio Bibles that can broadcast the good news in Haitian Creole to 300 people at a time.
And that's being, mailed or flown in by the Army?
I don't know who's delivering them, but they're there. It's called the Proclaimer, and 600 of them are already on their way so that people can die in misery, you know, pie in the sky when you die.
Oh, no, I mean, it's just frightening. And I'll end it with just, like, I couldn't believe when you were talking about some goddamn commercial with that Temptivo in it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and see, I was wrong. I kept saying that the Super Bowl was on Fox, and that kind of explained it. It's on CBS.
Yeah, no, I was about to say it's not on Fox. That's what I was going to say to you.
And apparently there's been some stinkage about it, and CBS says, no, we're going to run it.
No, but see, and it's just stunning to me. I mean, I thought my worst worry about the Super Bowl was looking at the Who. I'm like, aren't they, like, dead now? What's up?
Yeah, Roger Daltrey on a walker is going to be interesting.
Shit, but you're telling me now this that insipid, mealy-mouthed Tebow is going to be there? God.
I mean, there is consolation. Like I said the other night, Sandra, that will be the closest he ever gets to a Super Bowl. Yeah, it's a 30-second spot. Donor dollars from Focus on the Family, even though Focus on the Family has literally laid off hundreds, if not thousands, of its employees. Donor dollars are going to be used for this touching story of the value of life. What it's going to be is the story of how Tim Tebow's mom, Pam, was having a little difficulty with her pregnancy, and she claims, although there's no verification, this story, it's kind of like a Bible story. It's been told over and over again, but there's no verification of it. There's no doctor who's come forward to say, yep, that's how it was. She says that when she was pregnant with her fifth child, that she was having trouble with her pregnancy, and she was advised not to go back to be a missionary in the Philippines, and yada, 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 and a doctor advised her to abort her little baby. But she said no. And she had that baby anyway, and it was Timmy.
Oh, you know what? That you know, I don't know. That's just unbelievable. Please.
And we're going to get that 30 seconds in the foot. You know, come on, it's the Super Bowl, for God's sakes. You know, it's wings, and it's snacks, and it's beer, and barbecue, and sitting around and hooting and hollering with your buddies and carrying on and having a good time. And they're going to drop that downer in the middle of it?
God.
Does Focus on the Family not realize that there's a significant portion of America that wishes that Pam Tebow had the abortion?
I mean, it's just, I mean, that kid just rubbed me the wrong way. And I was rolling when, a few shows ago, Mike Malloy was talking about that other kid from Texas.
Oh, Colt McCoy?
How sick he was when he was listening to him talk about, oh, God, it must have been God's plan to keep me from playing. I was howling.
No, that wasn't God's plan. That was his agent's plan.
No, it was hilarious. Yeah, no, that too. But to hear the guy go on about it, and, you know, Malloy was so upset because no one ever checked that gibberish. Anyway, you know what? I have to let you go because...
Is this the part where we run screaming into the night, Sandra?
Yeah, no, it is. I know the phone call started out that way. It's just going to end that way because I am so mortified. I have to say, I'm mortified by what's transpiring, you know?
Well, you know what? There's always a nice way to... Take a deep breath and relax. Go over to sfgate.com and read Mark Morford's What to Wear to the Apocalypse.
Yes, I will go check that out.
You'll be all better.
Thanks. Okay, have a good show.
Later, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. No, really, I never miss an opportunity to plug Mark Morford. That guy keeps me sane. And that says it's saying a whole bunch. Let's see what's going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Well, hey, Brian, what's up?
I'm exhausted from working for the non-campaign of Martha Coakley for Senate.
Oh, God, didn't you just say a mouthful?
I just, I don't know what to say anymore.
Oh, I got your emails, man. You were emailing like a wild man. You were working at it.
But, she should have fought longer. If you go to bradblog.com, Brad makes a great piece, I think it's from last night, where how she ran over a couple of campaign workers just to get to the phone to concede before even the Associated Press announced that Scott Brown was the winner.
Right, before the Associated Press did, and before, as Brad also noted, a single human eyeball or a single human hand had been set on a single ballot.
Oh, God.
That says something. And the thing, you know, this goes back to my conversation with Dave a couple of nights ago, where I said, you know, if she was to win by more than 10%, they can't fool with the voting machines enough to make that wash. But
right.
You know, lo and behold, Brian, look at the tally. You know, 52-47% with 1% for the Libertarian.
A lot of vote switching going on, and all the calling I was doing to hundreds and hundreds of people there. I would say if I can equate it to like an exit poll, that kind of thing. We call a lot of independents too, and they're fearful about it. A few were fearful about the health care reform bill, but the fact is that if going by the people I was talking to, that the numbers don't reflect the real will of the people, which was still in favor of Martha Coakley and not Scott Brown. It was there was almost like a vote switching, like it was from 52-47 in favor of Coakley, it should have been. But the fact is, people, if they're worried about the health care reform, dear God, you know, Sandra, God love her, she just got off the phone. The way they manipulated the American people about this healthcare thing, this corporatist media, the big pharma-run media, the fact is, if you're worried about healthcare mandates, the fact is Scott Brown, as state senator, supported the 2006 Massachusetts healthcare reform, which requires all residents to purchase health insurance. It requires healthcare mandates. It mandates it.
Yeah.
He opposes the bills in the approved in late 2009 by the Democratic-led House and Senate. And now John McCain just sent out an email. They want to seat Scott Brown now. You know, it begins with my friend and all of the verbal.
Right, because Brian, they set that meme up a couple of weeks ago with the right wing dominated media. Repeating a bit of right-wing paranoia, just sort of burbling out of the mouth of Scott Brown, that there was a conspiracy not to seat him until after the health care vote.
Well, knowing the way Barack Obama has behaved towards the Republicans ever since he came into inaugurated, a year to the day, January 20th, 2009, I think he'll, yeah, it's like Mike Malloy says, he'll allow him to seat yesterday in the United States Senate, and he'll have him over to the House there for hot cocoa with the family and little Bo, the dog, and all that, you know, have a wonderful get together with Scott Brown. And I can't understand it. Scott Brown is, he's on all sides of a number of issues, and the fact is, he's for the torture policy, the kind of torture policy. He's a hawk on terrorism, you know. He's been the 30-year man. Interesting career. There's no doubt about it. And Scott Brown, but he's also he was 30 years in the National Guard, and yet he's got some kind of budging. What's the mafia term for power and influence? You know, ka-ching or budging or something. It's like a slot machine or change making its
cha-ching?
Way down the... Yeah. Ka-ching?
Yeah, cha-ching, something like that.
Okay,
yeah.
Something like that. And he's got...
Bada-boom, bada-bing?
Bada-bing, bada-boom. He can be for any war, but he doesn't have to go and serve on the front lines of that war. He has served in Kazakhstan, and so... That's not really in the front lines in the Iraq and Afghanistan war, and he's a total hawk on the war. He's a total hawk on the torture and waterboarding that has made tens of thousands of American casualties in Iraq and Afghanistan. After all the Arab and other Islamic young men saw the torture, the news of the torture in Bagram, in Abu Ghraib, of course, in Guantanamo, and they vowed to become suicide bombers just to go to America and kill a few Americans because of the torture. Because of what they saw being done to young Islamic men and innocent Arabic people, Iraqi people from all backgrounds, especially in Abu Ghraib, where like 99% of them were innocent people there, something like that. He personally believes in marriages between a man and a woman, but he hedges on the thing there. Because Massachusetts, they have just enacted the gay marriage bill there. They have just approved it. And he's not going to go against it. Well, he's a national, federal United States senator now. He's not going to. Nobody asked him in the press, apparently, the so-called journalist out there, that if he was going to continue serving as a state senator in Massachusetts, would he then start fighting against the Defense of Marriage? He would fight for the Defense of Marriage Act. He's for that, but he would against the gay marriage bill in Massachusetts, the new gay marriage bill. Would he fight to get rid of that? And nobody asked them that simple question. Thank God.
That's just the tip of a really big, ugly political iceberg, Brian, of stuff that wasn't done. It astonishes me. Like I said, it astonishes me. This isn't some Democrat running for an empty Senate seat in Utah. This was Massachusetts. 18%.
God love him. If he had been alive, he would have served in that seat until January 1st, at least until January 20th, 2013, or whenever they.
Without a doubt, and he hung on literally for dear life.
Yeah,
but
he hung on also to help Barack Obama get get elected and get in there, and his version of a health care bill would be much more, it wouldn't be so corporate friendly as even Barack Obama's is. But people, I'm telling you, if you let them manipulate you into voting for Scott Brown, he is gonna, if that's what led the people to allow him to be elected senator, the fact is he's for the mandated health, you know, health insurance. Scott Brown is for the corporation friendly type of thing. He's for the Wall Street bailout, the CDS, the blankety blank, that's paid out tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions, to these Wall Street CEOs and executives, that's the so-called profits that have come obviously from the taxpayers'
tons. Well, and Brian, get,
obviously,
Brian,
that,
Brian, and get
and,
this, get this,
Mark
though.
Coakley wanted to tax that, and Barack Obama wants to tax that, those exorbitant salaries, those of those thieves, but Scott Brown is all for that. That kind of thieving behavior is part of the free market of Scott Brown.
All of that. Now get this.
Okay.
I just saw this in the chat room. 18% of Massachusetts Obama voters voted for Scott Brown.
Yeah. And the thing is, Massachusetts, it's, I believe from the latest, what the statistics are, that 51% of all Massachusetts voters are independent. And independent, from what I've heard of too many independent callers to talk radio and other independents that I've spoken to on the street, they're just as intellectually lazy as too many Republican, as too many outright fascists are. And it's disgusting, but the fact is, there's also three times as many registered Democrats as there are Republicans in the rest of the voting base. But the numbers still, they could pan out to the where this could be a Diebold voting machine interference or not, it could possibly have been, he actually won the election out of this, Scott Brown. I'm not, but I believe it's because the American people allowed themselves to be so manipulated, not just the Massachusetts voters, but, and this is a sign for November, you know, that they've allowed themselves to be manipulated into thinking that Scott Brown is going to keep the health care as it is. But the fact is, we have a president in there, and he's far too feckless of a president, I agree, in too many ways. He wants to get some kind of health care reform in there, and he's, even if he, I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, got to check the box. Just got to check the box and say, we did health care.
Yeah, that's,
and then he'll move on and
do
other things. But see,
that's not the way to do health care.
No, it's not. But this,
Ted Kennedy would have done health care.
But, Brian, this has ramifications past health care. Whatever modest, measly, mealy-mouthed attempt at climate change legislation.
Yeah, that too
is embattled. Anything
really against the cap and trade, and he's at, you know, that January 2nd, 2010 teabaggers convention for Scott Brown, basically it was that get together. He's signed on to all of their issues, which are non-issues, which are reactionary.
Well, and understand this: last night at his his victory party, there were all over the building. These flags that, you know, the Betsy Ross American flag with the 13 stars in the circle on the blue field and the 13 red and white stripes,
Yeah, I don't want to go back to that kind of, to that America, that,
but
that,
wait,
that
but
time
wait,
in America.
But wait, Brian.
Yeah.
Those flags were all over the room, except they had been modified in one sense.
Okay.
Inside that ring of 13 stars had been inscribed the Roman numeral 2, II, 2. And what that means, and it was, and this isn't me playing Pink Floyd records backwards or anything.
No, I know.
They admitted it. What that means is they are calling for the second American Revolution. And we're talking about right wingers and teabaggers and incredibly violent rightist fascist elements in this country. They are calling for open violence against you and against me, Brian.
And they call
and all of us. The guy,
none of that during the 8 solid years of George W. Bush's fascistic rule.
Well, darn right. And here's what's more. The guy who is behind those flags, he sells those flags. See, it's all always a hustle. The guy who's behind those is a fellow named Jeff McQueen.
Okay.
And he sells it through his own business. It's called U.S. Revolution 2. And he explained what the flag meant, and then he said, "We are now as divided as America was in the 1860s. When two people find they can no longer communicate while living under the same roof, they often split apart and go their separate ways. So what if we took the United States and just split it in half? 24 states become the United States of the Democrats, and 24 states become the United States of the Republicans, including Ron Paul supporters and libertarians and so forth, and California and New York can be split in half and go to the side they choose. They are openly calling for the dissolution of the United States of America, Brian.
Like Sarah Palin and the Alaska Independence Party.
Exactly. You know? And Rick Goodhair Perry and his secession movement in Texas. I used to think, Brian, that, you know, maybe 200, 300 years out, we would see the Balkanization, not we, not you, not I, but that, yeah. But one could posit as a hypothesis for later subjection to rigorous testing, sociologically speaking, we would see the Balkanization of the United States. I used to think that was 200, 300, maybe 500 years out. It may not be 75 years out, Brian. These bastards want to destroy the United States of America. And that message isn't getting out there. That story about the flags and what this creep says, that's not on any of the network news. It's only being talked about on a little internet talk program.
And I'll just, because I'm still trying to take all of this in, Bob. And the fact is, you know, like, again, these Republicans, they've been saying for more than 10 years when they went after Bill Clinton for, you know, the personal life the politician has, you know, Bill Clinton never posed nude on the, in the centerfold of Cosmopolitan magazine.
Well, no, he didn't. And, you know, that's another layer of this toxic little onion of this Massachusetts race, and that is further proof of the right wing double standard. Had
another proof of it right here too.
Had that been Martha Coakley, in that photograph, she would have been pilloried as a whore, a tramp, a slut, a slattern.
Mike Malloy talked about some wise guy at Scott Brown's, one of his rallies, one of his last rallies there, said some kind of remark there, some kind of sexual attack remark or something about that, God love her, about Martha Coakley. I wish she had more fight in her for this campaign, too, especially, I believe, Brad Friedman, about those die ball voting machines. I believe that there was at least some vote switching that went on. The fact is that this kind of male, you know, what was it like George Bush Sr. says about when he debated Miss Ferraro, I kicked a little butt, you know, he uses the other word, it begins with an A for it, I kicked a little female, you know what, you know, there's some kind of a sexual inadequacy thing going on there, or some kind of, that causes men to say these kind of hateful things, misogynistic things towards women candidates, qualified women leaders like Martha Coakley, who's fought for years as an attorney general against, you know, for all women victims of crime. She's been a hawk on that issue, on that kind of thing. And she's fought against the Bechtel Corporation that overcharged the American federal taxpayers, et cetera, and the Ted Williams Big Dig project there, tens of billions of dollars. Bechtel, now they helped build some of those so-called earthquake-proof buildings in Haiti. God love those people. And in Iraq, all the building they did, Bechtel. And she fought against them. She's trying to get some money back to the people of Massachusetts and the American people. She's a good, well-qualified, highly qualified senator. She would be much better if you're worried about a health care bill, she would have been much better for any average citizen to get a bill that's not going to mandate you, force you to get coverage. It's not going to force you it's not going to make you a feudal peasant to the corporations even more. But Scott Brown wants to make you into that. And that's what he like I said, the 2006 bill, he's for health care insurance mandates, forcing every citizen to get health care coverage. And the fact also, and I'll just leave you this, well, there's another one quote there, or the other one bit of information. From the 2010 Senate race, Brown was supported by the Greater Boston Tea Party, which organized a January 2nd, 2010 fundraising breakfast forum in Boston, which he attended. 11 days later, the Boston Globe reported that Brown claimed he was unfamiliar with the Tea Party movement when he was questioned by a reporter. And the Tea Party Express, that's part of that, that's Boston Tea Party, that Tea Party movement, has endorsed Brown's campaign. you know, again, he's trying to play to the so-called, he's trying to come off as a so-called moderate. At the same time, he's virulently in favor of these reactionary Tea Party bastards and the Alaska Independence Party and Sarah Palin. It's the same thing. He's very friendly towards them. He's even more overt about it. And yet the so-called news media, so-called liberal news media, has done nothing to call the guy on it. I'm going by some other things too. I'm wondering, this Colonel Brown, he hasn't served. He's a total hawk on the war on terrorism, but he's not serving on the front lines in Baghdad or Iraq or Afghanistan. And I don't know whether he's Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now or more Colonel Kilgore. I think he's more Colonel Kilgore. Colonel Kilgore, with, you know, Robert Duvall's character.
Yeah.
His young men were doing most of the dying well ahead of him in the front lines there against the wholly overmatched poor Vietnamese peasantry there, you know, against American firepower there when it was really brought to bear there at full tilt there in the Vietnam War. And he, that kind of showy, vicious behavior, I'm getting the sense that's might be more what Scott Brown is more in love with. There's that kind of thing. But it's just a sick.
Well, it's the typical phony patriotism of the,
yeah,
of the Sunshine Patriot is what it is. Hey, Brian, I've got to roll on, but it's been
okay.
A great call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, take care. That's Brian calling from New Hampshire. And, you know, I got a feeling that the closer you are to Massachusetts, the more this hurts. But by the same token, what was to get? Look, I'm just being realistic. I mean, I understand what the numbers are, but A, the 60-vote so-called supermajority in the Senate never existed. B, if Harry Reid had a 75-member supermajority, it still wouldn't matter because Harry Reid won't lead. Hey, that's a bumper sticker. Harry Reid won't lead. And maybe that sounds a little jaundiced, but I'm sorry. This is the view from the wilderness. Because if we as liberals think that we aren't in the wilderness, we are profoundly self-deluded. There is some sort of a majority in it. There was a headline, there was a tongue-in-cheek headline at some website earlier today that said, or early on after the Brown victory was announced, that said, what was it? Republicans reclaim Republicans reclaim 59-41 majority in Senate. Whatever the numbers were. Republicans reclaim 41-59 majority in Senate. And that's the truth. The majority party in the United States Senate is the Republican Party. Get over it. It's the truth. So there we are. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob. How are you tonight?
Well, Reverbo, welcome home.
Yeah, they really kicked some ass when they had that old duster-proof Senate, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, it was nice while it lasted.
Man, oh man, they just power all those programs through, man.
I mean, we got our universal health care. I mean, they've quit blowing up my mountains.
Nothing like having a monopoly, you know, in D.C. to just really get things moving. Yeah, I mean, if you never had anything. You throw Lieberman in there, and you throw people like Ben Nelson in there, and all this. I mean, you never had it to begin with. So big deal. Now you have what? Now it's 57-43, 56-44. It's just,
Jesus, it sounds like an Arizona Cardinals score.
It does. I mean, it's laughable. They're going to make a big deal about this crucial 60 vote. Yeah, like they really did a lot with that. That went real well. But what I really want to get back to, I'm stuck on 2 hours ago to get the Gabon Viper and the Jesus gun. You know me.
Oh, well, okay. You would be, yes.
The Gabon Viper? God, of course I listen to this show every night. Where the hell are you going to hear somebody say that?
I like to think nowhere, but, you know, that's me and my monstrous ego.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's, I didn't, yeah, somewhere in the back of my brain cells that are still functioning.
Well, isn't that one of the most poisonous snakes on Earth or something? I mean.
Oh, it's an ugly, ugly sucker, too.
That's what I thought.
And the Jesus gun. Where I want a Jesus gun.
Well, there are thousands of them. All you have to do, Reverbo, is jine up.
I want to,
But the question, you know, the real question is, will you get a 2 Corinthians Jesus gun, or will you get a John 8:12 Jesus gun?
I guess it's just surprised me.
Well, you know, but it's kind of like Sneetches, you know, the guys that, I personally would not feel comfortable unless I got one of the John Jesus guns, because Corinthians, you know, that's just St. Paul. I want one that's got the real, I want one that's got bullets coming out the muzzle. With the real force and effect of a gospel behind it.
Well, I was thinking I want to be, you know, squaring down, drawing down on my enemy through a smiting scope.
And you know what? You know where I think, and we've had this conversation before, Reverbo, work with me, will you?
Okay.
You know how we, I've said on a number of occasions that the right wing watches movies and thinks they're documentaries?
Sure.
Do you remember Saving Private Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that sweet, sweet Southern boy sniper up in the bell tower putting the crosshairs on the Nazis and saying, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Yeah. Bang! And the Nazi drops dead.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm giggling at that. Yes, yes.
If you think about it, you know, they say that this stuff all started like with a contract in 2005 or some such. That's from, you know, what, consider corporate R&D, all right? Takes a little while to get stuff done. So imagine that somewhere up in Michigan, maybe Romulus, I don't know. I always liked the idea of Romulus, Michigan, and wondered if there was a Remus. But somewhere up in Michigan, which, oddly enough, was also the original home of Blackwater, which was, oddly enough, also run by a bloodthirsty radical Christian fundamentalist named Eric Prince.
Indeed.
Somewhere up there, a guy sits in the theater watching the right wing just flocked to Saving Private Ryan. They didn't get the message out of Saving Private Ryan that us liberals did. Of course, I sat in the theater with the full Dolby Digital sound, and I was about halfway down into the concrete aisles by the time the Normandy invasion, you know, 5 minutes into the, because the damn bullets were flying around my head, and I was ducking. That Dolby's something. But
well, if I can interject really quick, you don't ever kill Tom Hanks. But let's continue.
Yeah, I know. But only after he invents the sticky bomb.
They killed him in the Road to Perdition, too, though, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, they did.
But I guess you can kill them, and it's okay.
But anyway, so somewhere back there, when Saving Private Ryan comes out, there's a guy sitting in the movie watching the redneck Southern cracker sniper mumbling Bible verses in King James English with an Alabama hill country accent. Going, damn, we got to do this. And so he goes home and he scrawls some notes, and then you go into the R&D phase, and by 2005, you've got Bible verses inscribed on scopes. Tell me I'm crazy.
You're not crazy. But you can do that, but of course I have to buy them. I like the idea of maybe, I like the guns, but we need to send them back. We need to do some modifications on them. Because, we're just not all Christian soldiers in this man's army.
So maybe we need a scope with a quote from the Bhagavad Gita, perhaps, "Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds."
I love this idea. There's a whole lot of holy books. I think we can pick some nice things from all of them.
Yeah, kill the infidel. We can inscribe that Quranic verse on the scope for all the Muslim American soldiers.
That would be fun.
And we can have something about slaughtering the men, the women, the children, the beasts of the field, and salting the earth from the Old Testament for the Jewish soldiers.
There you go.
And, you know, I don't know why that, you know, it's kind of sissified that they were using John and Corinthians and all, you know, because that first Corinthians 13, you know, if I have not love, I am become as sounding brass. That's just wimpy. You know, I want to, where's the verses from Revelation, Reverbo?
If we're going to be smiting, I don't want any Bible light. I want the real thing. It's in there.
And yea, verily they did die, and their eyeballs did rot out in their sockets, and their tongues become as death in their mouths. Amen.
Oh, have mercy. I got to get a hold of one of these Jesus guns. But damn it, that's not the one I want. I like the whole, the Jesus gun I want is the paradoxical one, right? That's the one we want. We want to shoot the hateful with love. Have mercy.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Put your hand in the air, Brother Reverbo. Shoot him with love. Bullets of love. 22 caliber love.
I just want to spray. Yeah, I mean, I...
You want the grease gun of love.
I do want that. Well, see, it's a paradox. Well, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing I do know is that the Democrats, you were talking about... No, she wasn't a very good candidate. She was horrible. But up there in Massachusetts, good Lord, it reminds me of that old, when we talk about, you know, an old friend of ours, he's the only person ever who could dig a hole in Texas and not strike oil.
Right.
That's how you lose in Massachusetts if you're not a, it's just impossible.
When you lose because 18% of the Obama voters said I prefer the teabag and birth or death or booger eater wingnut, that's a special kind of loserness.
We're talking about that, you know, the Democrats wouldn't. It's the independent voter that lost it. But if the Democrats, I'm pissed off, obviously too. This goes without saying at this point. Everybody's pissed off that the Democrats have sold out so blatantly. But again, are we nostalgic for those, those halcyon days of the Bush administration? Man, we were just swimming in middle-class prosperity then. Remember that?
Oh, I do. We were just...
Sweet.
Too much prosperity.
Sweet.
Oh, and by the way, we got to back up to the Jesus guns. Just a minute, Reverbo. Okay. Because we've got a comment in from Diane up in New York. And I got to get with Diane talk some voodoo doll with her. She might be just the person. She says, as far as the Jesus guns are concerned, Bob, the guns have to be holy, because what about all the vampires? I mean, if they don't have stakes, they have to have a holy weapon, right? I mean, how else is the army going to save us from the vampires? You have no idea how Twilight has inspired the terrorists. Oh, no. Not Twilight. Oh, please, don't let our American military be entirely pale, angsty people. Angsty teenagers. Oh, wait. I think we've got another winner for... Oh. Oh, dear. But you know what... I mean, well, I don't know. You don't have kids of the right age. You probably haven't been inundated with Twilight, have you?
Probably not.
Trust me, it's ugly.
She's on to something there, but you got to be careful with, you know, shooting vampire gun. Well, I got some plans for that one.
Oh, have you? Are you already got plans in the works?
Well, it's not the same plans that they have.
And zombies?
You see, I would love to load that gun. You know, load it with silver bullets. I have a large list of the undead that. We can start tonight. That'd be fine. So I want a different kind of Jesus gun. I want the kind of Jesus gun that Jesus would make and hand out and say, let's get rolling, boys. We got a lot of work to do.
Well, in fact, but you know, Jesus kind of had the Jesus gun, didn't he?
Well, he did.
It was, when people were hungry, it was food. That was a Jesus gun.
It was.
And when they were being idiots, it was a simple little story that could help them understand things. That was a Jesus gun.
Essentially.
And oddly enough, there were, with the exception of the crowd in Jerusalem for the Passover, when he was out in the countryside, there were a lot more people on his side than there were against him. That Jesus gun was working. But then he resorted to violence, and he went into the temple with the flails and whipped the money changers and offended the corporate structure of ancient occupied Palestine. And then there goes everything.
So you're talking about, you know, that knucklehead you had, you were talking about the whatever they were doing, dropping Bibles on people in Haiti or something.
600 of them.
Does it really surprise you that people pile on, you know, that they pile on tragedies like that and exploit those poor people? I mean, it's just, what is Naomi Klein called? It's disaster capitalism. It's disaster.
Right, and you've got to understand, Reverbo, everything that works behind that. That's 600 sold. Wait, you know, I mean, let's, because I just sort of ran past it. Help me here. That's 600 solar-powered audio Bibles that can broadcast to up to 300 desperate Haitians with one solar-powered audio Bible. Did I say solar-powered?
All I can say is I am glad I am sitting down.
It's
think about this, though. They just got it all wrong. Satan doesn't need to hassle those people down there. Satan doesn't need to waste his time with the poor Haitians. The ripest souls to buy are right here in town. They're right here in our own country. You can't get a riper bunch than this. They're there in Washington. They're in the Senate. They're in the House.
They're already wholly owned subsidiaries, too.
I don't know why you'd waste your time.
But, you know, the background behind this behind this so-called faith-based group, Jesus, that's another thing from the Bush administration, homeland and faith-based. This faith-based group giving away these 600 proclaimers, that's the name of it. It's the Proclaimer. Now, these things can't be cheap. And they're, you know, what, parachuting them into Haiti? I don't know. And they're just proclaiming proclaiming when they leave the door of the airplane. Whatever. But they can't come cheap. And that means that this Albuquerque, New Mexico outfit has a significant enough donor base that they have been able to put the bite on, the hustle on American citizens to pony up $5 or $10 at a time. And you know what the pitch is like. You've heard the pitch. Brothers, sisters, they're in a terrible spot in Haiti. And what they need right now, they need, and this is a quote, they need the faith and hope and love through God's word in audio. They don't need water. They don't need food. They don't need medicines, nor bandages, nor antiseptics, nor electricity, nor heavy equipment operators, or rescuers, or first responders. They need faith, hope, and love through God's word and audio. And if you, brother, and you, sister, just send us $10 right now, why, you'll be paying for 5% of a proclaimer that'll reach 300 Haitians with God's love.
Money's coming in. We're going to need shovels.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the 600 proclaimers, Reverbo, was only the first round. That's just what's on the way now. They're still doing the hustle. And so for however many thousands upon thousands of dollars they raise, that's a suture that will not close a wound. That's a wound that will fester. That's festering that will become necrotic. That's necrosis that will become gangrenous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't. How stunningly these people don't understand their own faith.
And you can also, and if there was ever an iota of doubt in this organization, you can also hear, well brother, pastor, don't they need medicine? I mean, these poor people need medicine. Oh, sinner. Don't you know what our Lord and Savior said? The poor ye have always with ye.
Oh, God. Oh, now you're for sure, you're not kidding. They're not tying peanut butter sandwiches and bottles of water to these proclaimers.
No.
And you can't eat the proclaimers.
No.
No. And there's no...
Now, but if you are an enterprising Haitian, what you probably can do is scavenge the solar collector off of it and maybe get some 12-volt current that might light a light bulb.
That is so sad.
But that would involve the desecration of God's word, and it would just prove further that them Haitians have a pact to the devil.
How badly we need to beat them over the head with Jesus. Yeah, you know, the same thing happened in New Orleans. The same thing happened with Katrina, essentially. These people just, I mean, there are these poor people just stand on top of their roofs. Just, you know, there's George Bush circling overhead. It's just,
and right, and there's some ass from Blackwater in a boat going, y'all got any guns in there? You need to turn them over quick.
Yeah. Before we can give you any food, we want to just beat on you some more. Like you haven't been beat on enough. Well, God, it's just unbelievable. I don't even, Haiti is so sad from start to finish. The last place on earth they needed this was Haiti. Not that anybody wants it, but, you know, the earth to eat.
But, you know, there was another quake there today.
I know.
And we barely, it wasn't any little pissant quake. It was a 6.1-er.
I can't believe how much God hates those people, Bob.
Well, you know, it's that pact with the devil.
Oh,
you know, they
prove that. We prove that.
Back the wrong horse. Well, I mean, it's got to be true. Pat Robertson said, you know, he gave the quote and he said, and the devil said, that's good. He quoted the devil.
Mm.
He's got it in quotes.
I must not have tuned in that day.
Yeah, that's that chapter. That's that chapter on the aftermath of the French Revolution that nobody ever pays attention to.
Good Lord, you know that Ed Booth, Scott Brown. I mean, to get back to him, and I don't want to keep. This is dead, and this is unreal. But I mean, it's more. But you heard what he just ran on more Republican bumper sticker talk. I mean, they just basically just make this shit up on the spot now.
Well, they don't have to work at it. That's what the corporate-owned media are for.
Exactly.
And the people that they're broadcasting the message to are motivated largely by distrust, paranoia, and hate, and so all they've got to do is up the nutty ante. You know, they just set off another bozo grenade, and they're good.
There you go. Kaboom. Yeah. And they're especially susceptible if you're stressed out and pissed off. Like everybody is, that's how you get that. You head to the authoritarian side. You'll believe just
Not to drag you back to Haiti or anything. Why do you think those 600 proclaimers are going? Because you know what? The people with the proclaimers will not hesitate to try to hustle what few pennies out of a Haitian they can get, too, because it's all to the glory of God.
Yeah,
play to the desperate, play to the hard up, play to the heartbroken, play to the stupid, and you've got yourself the business model of a pretty healthy religion.
That's pretty much it. Oh, God.
You know, we don't want to do any of that serious navel-gazing about what it really means to love your neighbor as yourself.
No.
Because, you know, that's the second commandment, according to the brown guy from Palestine. Okay? What's the first commandment? Love God. What's the second commandment? And he hauls out a commandment that's not a commandment, and he says, the second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. And that had to be a real eye roller for the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes and the Hottentots. Because it ain't in there. Love your neighbor is not in there. No, it's not number two. Not number ten. Not on the list. What? And pretty soon, you know, oh, we're going to nail your ass up for that, buddy. Love your neighbor. Who do you think you are? But you know what? If you love your neighbor, and you know what? Here's the news flash. Haitians are our neighbors.
Sounds suspicious.
So
like a redistribution of love and wealth to me.
Yeah. So, too, oddly enough, are Iranians and Palestinians and Afghanis.
Sounds pretty socialist to me.
Yeah, it is. But if you sit there and you think about what it means to love your neighbor, you don't drop the proclaimer on them, you drop a medical kit.
I call me crazy, but it seems obvious to me. And I don't know how come these people don't get more rationalist shit for just this lunacy.
Because again, the only people talking about it's a little internet radio show with a relatively tiny listener base.
And that's what you got to do. How you got to, we can talk about all the, we have to just start to networks. That's how you beat Scott Brown. You were right on when you said, that's exactly why. We got these people pretending they're liberals writing for the Wall Street Journal. It's just insane. That's the only way to win. You can put boots on the ground, you can knock on doors and all that stuff, but the way to do it, the easy way, obviously, the most efficient way, is you got to get some networks of our own. It's never been more obvious than yesterday's election.
And, you know, I was talking...
Stop running these arrogant, boring candidates, but it's, never mind that, I guess, for now.
Stop running arrogant, boring candidates, really.
You've got to be better than that, especially... God, how could you lose to Daffy Duck in Massachusetts? How did you do that?
How do you lose to a nude model... In the state where banned in Boston was just about damn near the state motto.
You know, Sandra was talking about, touched on the whole, the how they work the fear of deficit spending, the whole deficit thing into the, twisting all the issues around into, of course, the big ones knowing the cost of everything, but the value of nothing. And how easy that is to just distort the whole thing, like healthcare, and how it makes it so easy for, you know, if you're explaining, as they say, you're losing. And if somebody just stands up there and says, it's going to put people out of work, it's going to raise your taxes, and then they're not taking any questions, nobody asks them, well, what do you mean? I mean, Christ, how, excuse me, how easy can it be, you know?
Yeah, and see, you know, we talk about building networks. Pardon me for saying it, but this is, and I realize it's a little bit of a bone of contention, but this is where stuff like Twitter and Facebook come in. You know, subscribing and retweeting and God, I hate that. And passing information along so that it will hit, you know, it'll hit places and maybe touch people where they hadn't heard about it before. Because it's not going to happen from ABC, NBC, CBS, or Fox, or any of those other clowns.
Well, yeah, I mean, Twitter all you want, and listen to the horn all you want. We got to do the Nader model. We have to just get people who have a lot of money, and we have to start our own Fox. That's all there is to it. It simply has to be, when I'm waiting for my snow tires to get put on, I got to hear you. Because the TV is on everywhere, but the Internet is not on everywhere. The Internet isn't on in drugstores and tire stores and dentist offices.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I can sit here and listen to the Internet all day. It accomplishes nothing. Everybody's just...
But you know, that's expanding a little bit, Reverbo, and I was reminded... The snow tires comment is really, really prescient because it reminds me of Wayne's comment from the other night, where he was talking about the fact that, you know, he'd gotten his new iPhone and he's trying to listen to the horn. And apparently, if you're somewhere and you've got Internet service on your phone, like most of these smartphones require you to subscribe to Internet through whatever company now, and apparently you can listen to the horn dial-up stream on even the non-3G elements of a network now. And so if you're sitting there at Quickie Lube or whatever, and you're getting your oil changed, and you're sitting in the room, and there's O'Reilly blathering away up in the corner on the TV, you can use your phone with your Internet, especially your iPhone or whatever, and you can call up the horn stream, and you can sit there and listen to the rerun stream of the horn and make the other people in the room tell you to turn it off, and you say, I'll turn it off when you turn that right-wing son of a bitch off.
Well, you can do that. Not too many people are into confrontations, and... You're still talking about the intelligent end of the bell curve. my redneck Uncle Curtis, he ain't going to even, he's going to listen to horn no matter what. You just have to hold him down and turn on the progressive network. I really don't have a redneck Uncle Curtis, but I kind of, for a minute, hope that he did.
Well, I understand, yeah.
I got one more thing before I hang up.
All right.
You've got to take a look at the Rolling Stone, this week's Rolling Stone, and have a look at your boy Blankenship in there.
Oh, you mean what's that article, the biggest criminals of the...
Yeah. Oh, God, they're all just, I mean...
Well, you know, I got big fun coming tomorrow night. I'm not going to be on the air tomorrow night, Reverbo.
Oh, well, what's happening?
I'm going to be down at the University of Charleston's Riggleman Hall, and I'm busting my ass to try to get a stream out of there, but they may not press credential me, so I will note to Facebook where the thing can be heard, because everybody's going to want to tune in, probably. The great debate between Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Don Blankenship.
That's tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Charleston Civic Center, Charleston, West Virginia. Wrestling. No. It's at the University of Charleston's Riggleman Hall tomorrow night, 6 p.m. And it's one of those Valley of the Shadow of Death things, because lo and behold, the Fockers have been sent out a command from the faces of coal, demanding that they be rallied, that they have a riot in the parking lot so that they can intimidate us out-of-state tree huggers.
I see. Well, how come Blankenship hasn't pulled out of this debate yet?
I think he's going for the dramatic. He's going to pull out at the last minute.
Is he going to wear that Stars and Stripes shirt?
Oh, sure he will, because tomorrow's rally in the parking lot is a rally for America.
Because I don't know how many holes are in a normal human body, but Blankenship's going to have like a dozen more in short order. If you don't broadcast it, you're going to try to live cast it?
Well, I was going to, but apparently...
Well, how else could you hear it if you don't have...
Well, apparently one of the Charleston TV stations has the exclusive on it.
Oh, God, how are we going to hear this?
Because they're webcasting it. And I'm not sure. It may be WOWK-TV. I'll check into it and try to find out what I can. It's going to be astonishing, without a doubt.
You have seen the Rolling Stone. You've seen that picture of him?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and at the bottom, what really is a nice tag on the whole thing is where he admits that he doesn't really give a shit about global warming. He just cares about, you know, making money for his company. That's the blurb under his picture.
Yeah,
he says, nah, this is just a stunt. I don't give a shit. I don't care about poisoning the water. I don't care about any of this. I just want to make money.
We're only here for the money.
Wow. Imagine that. In a way, his truthfulness, I don't even know what to make of that. See, like, we didn't, like, that slipped our mind, Don.
I know.
And then, really, once again, it's just so stunning how we, you know, we can't possibly pay for anything. We can't saddle our kids and our grandkids with these incredible bills for, you know, health care and stuff. But we can, Don Blankenship doesn't mind my kids and my grandkids, you know, paying to clean up the water. And certainly the Department of Defense and the Pentagon doesn't mind my kids paying for that war over the next 50 years. That seems to be okay. We don't care about deficit spending where we're at, do we?
Not so much. No. Hey, Reverbo, it's good to have you back, brother. I'm glad you got back home and everything. And I look forward to our next one.
Me too.
All right.
Make it personal.
Take care. Bye now. Critic at large, Reverbo. And do indeed make it personal. Because that's what this is. Does it need to be any clearer? Could this possibly be any less or any more personal? There were flags at Scott Brown's victory celebration last night inciting people to start shooting at you and me. Because the guy who came up with that flag with the Roman numeral 2 in the circle between among the stars said, well, it could stand for Revolution 2, which is what we Tea Partiers want. But, you know, I got to think it also stands for the Second Amendment as well. And, baby, you know what? They will scribe their own Bible verses on their rifle barrels when they're ready to come after you. They mean it. They're in earnest. They're a deadly lot. And they hate this country. They hate this country with every ounce of hate they've got in them. Haiti is what they want. Somalia is what they want. No regulation, no government, just a wonderland of the free market. And only the fittest survive. And they plan on being the fittest. Email in from David in Tennessee, subject line, Proclaimers? Those evangelicals are shipping Proclaimers. And meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders is doing life-saving amputations without anesthetics. Yes, Bob, without anesthetics. The doctors there are reduced to doing surgery, quote, in an American Civil War manner, in an attempt to save lives. Cold turkey. Here, Pierre, bite the stick while I relieve you of that crushed lower leg. But in through the window, come to Jesus on the leg you have left, sinner. And of course, Jesus won't be growing any limbs back in Haiti either. Because as we've discussed on this program on a number of occasions, for some reason or another, God can heal mysterious cancers, but he has never so much as grown back the last knuckle of a little finger. Never. We don't know what God has against amputees, but it's clear there's a problem. So let's go on and see what's happening on the phone lines. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Well, hey, Ed.
How's it going?
It's been a busy night.
Yeah, I got on there earlier and then had to punch off because I had another phone call. It was going to take some time, but I can sure appreciate everything that you talked about and how accurate it is, in my opinion. But I wanted to. I had a few comments, and
we'll go right ahead.
Very disgusted with Obama and the Democrats. You know what? They're the only group of people that you could put 99% in charge, and they would screw it up. I am so disgusted, I feel like becoming an independent myself. But it's just a pitiful situation. And you can go across the news things today, and this little Eric Cantor, pimp that he is, they get on there and act like that they're in a majority now, you know, since they've got this. That's what gets me why I made the statement at the offset that, you know, where are we? Well, you know, what are we doing to counter this? And, Bob, they do not want to, you know, they indicate that they haven't had a chance to have any input to this. And this whole nation knows that there's a no group. So I.
But you know why they act like they do. You know why they act like they're in the majority, even though they're not, Ed. And why they bully poor little Harry Reid around, and he lets them. You know why they do that? Because that's a black man in the White House, and you've heard it a million times. If you've heard it once, I'll bet you we're going to take our country back. It's their country. It's not ours. Majority rules.
Yeah, it ain't nobody else's. Nobody else is involved with it but them.
You know, it doesn't matter if they lose an election. It doesn't matter if they get trounced. It's their country.
Yeah, and it's their political thing. In the meantime, they walked on the Democrats while they were in office. Didn't allow nothing, and I guarantee if George Bush would have backed wanted a health plan. He would have got it. And this is what gets me about Obama with the numbers that he's got had, at least. But this has got to have shaken the Democrats up to where they'll probably be afraid to use the bathroom now. It just, it's irritating. I'm so disgusted with politics, and you know how political I am to start with, but I'm certainly not, I don't feel that way tonight. And the other part of it is, Obama still, he's such an idiotic person that he still thinks that he can work with the Republicans.
And that's, you know, that's the one that just stops me in my ever-loving tracks, Ed.
Yeah.
What sign? I mean, does there really have to be like a moving hand upon the wall like the Old Testament story?
I know what.
You know, many, many tekelu farsin or whatever it was. Does a hand have to appear out of nowhere and write on the wall in front of Barack Obama, you can't work with these thugs, you idiot?
Yep, and it, I'm going to tell you what, if anybody would run against him that had any guts or whatever you want to classify it, I'd vote for him tonight. That's how disgusted I am with the...
Kind of makes you wonder about whether or not Howard Dean might mount a primary challenge.
Sir?
Kind of makes you wonder about whether or not Howard Dean might mount a primary challenge.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, he'd have my vote. But
I'd be hard-pressed not to vote for him, too.
Harry Reid, for a man that's a boxer, he sure takes a lot of crap. I'd get one of them guys. I'd do like Jim Sprouse did a couple of them. I'd get them around the corner, and I'd show them what tattoos and knuckles could do. That's the way I feel about some of the ones that try that bully stuff on them. And that's what they are. They are bullies. Ed, did you see Eric Cantor on the news today?
Not today, but I mean, I despise him.
He was ever a pimp for the capitalist system and for the Republicans, or pigs, whatever you want to call them. He is he's just picture perfect for it. But I just wanted to express my disgust with the Democrats' policies, not as a Democratic theory. The theory of being a Democrat and what it stands for is a lot different than what they're doing.
And that remains solid, but their actions are running directly contrary to everything that exists within that theoretical realm.
We're compromising every... It's just like, I mean, the health bill is a reflection of what the Democrats are. And I hate to say it, but we've compromised that away, too.
But you're here, Ed.
I wanted to, if you got very many on the line waiting.
No, I got a few stacked up, but we got a couple minutes.
Okay, well, I was going to comment on Haiti a little bit. I've been there. I cruised the Caribbean a lot. Every January 8th, we left and went down for 6 weeks shakedown cruises when I was in the Navy. And Haiti is a unique country. They haven't heard of the stuff we believe, unless missionaries or somebody's went in the last years, because voodoo was the big thing back then, and that may not sit good with you, but it was not only there, but that was the heaviest place it was practiced. But throughout the Caribbean, there was voodoo practices. But I just thought I'd add that in.
Oh no, it exists. It exists, but it's not. But it's not some sort of the manifestation of satanic evil. It's not the same as Satanism. It's an animistic, naturalized religious response to the circumstances in which it arose, as all religions are. And remember, the other the dominant religion in Haiti, Ed, is Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, I know it is now. In fact, one of the priests got killed down there, or cardinals, or whatever he was, whatever his rank was. Of course, they got ranks. Those people outranked one another with God.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was in the making.
I never read that part of the Bible either, but, you know, who the heck am I? Yeah. But it's what, and I've said this several times on the program because I keep wanting to reiterate it. It goes back to what
what Lottie says, Bob Lottie in the chat room. He's pointed out on a number of occasions that Roman Catholicism is growing in the world in the least developed countries where there's still vast reserves of superstition. And that leads Lottie to say that the majority of Roman Catholics in the world today practice Roman Catholicism with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other. And the fact of the matter is that's how the church has developed all over the world. The Irish Catholic Church is somewhat different from the Italian Catholic Church, and the Roman Catholic Church is different from the Greek and the Russian and the Serbian and the Syrian Orthodox Church. And they all develop as a response to the cultures in which they arise.
Well, do you know what? I'm awful glad that we don't need any of them. That we've got if you believe and believe that there's a God, I believe that, I don't just believe it. The book says we got a direct connection if we want to get in touch.
Well, my chore is always trying to figure out what God it is they're worshiping. Because, I mean, I don't mind saying I don't want any part of any God that Pat Robertson worships, or that creep who says that Haiti is just that the misery in Haiti is merely an interruption, that these thousands upon tens of thousands of human beings have suffered and died what he said is the greater glory of God. I want no part of any of that.
No. And I'm not going to have any part of it. I can go to hell by myself and without their help.
Well, can you imagine wanting to be part of any heaven that's got Jerry Falwell in it?
I hope I got my cabin on the other corner.
There you go.
If I ever get one. But I want to touch on one other thing. And I don't know how you feel about jobs. But, you know, we can cry till hell freezes over about job creation. Bob, our basic base has been shipped out to other countries until we find the means of getting, and I don't care if it's a covert action to create wars in those countries to run those capitalist bastards back here to where we can deal with them or whatever it is. But until those jobs, some of the bases brought back here, we're not going to have the kind of jobs and the kind of wages, kind of living conditions, kind of purchasing power that we had 25 years ago. It's ironic that they holler job creation. You can't keep spending tax dollars creating jobs that are not permanent. You know, how many roads can you fix? If you got a different perspective on that, I'd like to hear it.
But I don't, because you're correct.
But I am just so disgusted with everything, and I think we talked before, everything that you go after, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, it's split. Seems like it's 48-51%. 46-52%. It's this nation, there is not of the kind of leadership in it that takes to unite people to get it done. And I know this church night, so I'll add this. The book says a house divided against itself can't stand. That's just not talking about a household.
No, Abraham Lincoln recognized that that's talking about a whole nation.
Yeah, right. But a lot of people, yeah, well, you know, like you said, the evangelicals or the Pat Robinsons and the idiots like him, they take that literally. You know, they bring it down to the lowest denominator that you've got and try to deal with it.
Exactly. And, you know, with regard to your jobs comment, Ed, our buddy David in Tennessee says, you know, it's green jobs that will bring manufacturing back to this country. And that's the truth. There is a coming energy economy in this country that is nothing but one great big 175% whopping opportunity.
Yeah, well,
but we don't seem to want any part of it.
The reason for that is we have got probably 20-25% at the present rate of petroleum, of oil, is projected that we've got enough to do 20 to 25 years. So it's got to come if we survive. But who is going to be making the components that run these windmills, that make the other products that create the energy plants and so forth like that? Where it's like the automobile, you know. Yeah, they're made, some of them's made in America that used to be strictly made overseas, but
a bunch of the ones that used to be made strictly in America, I mean, you've seen my big old rusty beat up Dodge truck, right?
Well,
that sucker was assembled in Mexico.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Where is all this stuff going to be assembled and made and then shipped in here for us to put together?
Well, and when are the American capitalists going to get on board with the idea of making it here? I mean, we've got factories doing wind turbines and solar panels and so forth, and guess what? They're European firms. They're making them in the United States, but they're European firms doing it. So that means the money eventually goes back across the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and all that is a recipe for going back to a, I guess you'd call it a green mercantilist economy. Because we have successfully beaten down the labor base in this country, Ed, to the point that people, you know, my God, they'll have a listing in Detroit, for 100 jobs at $9 an hour, and 5,000 people will show up to apply for them. I mean,
I think that's really good wages.
I was
making more than that, a couple dollars more on the hour in 1970. So that ain't no money for nowadays. That's like almost like minimum wage was then.
It probably is by the time you get done with the economic reduction to present value and all of that stuff. Well, Ed, I tell you what, it's awful good to hear from you. I'm going to try to wedge a couple more of these phone calls in, but don't be a stranger. You chime in any time, and want me to put you back on hold to the end of the show?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
I appreciate your time and your comments.
Oh, and I appreciate yours. You take care, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, stand by. I'm putting you back on hold.
All righty.
And that's our buddy Ed, one of my neighbors here in Fayette County, and I tell you, he's a mighty good neighbor to have, too. Let's keep it going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, Gonzo greetings.
Well, hey, Spike, what's up?
What's going on? Not much. Getting a good laugh out of the fact that now I've discovered that if those Sexton pics of me get out, I'm safe. I can still be a senator in Massachusetts. So, and by the way, I got to use more of my hand to cover something. So I feel secure a little bit after seeing that guy.
But remember, you're going to have to be a birther, tenther, deather, teabagger. Right-wing repiglic and conservative to get away with it, because if you did it as a Democrat, Jim Demented or Jim Inhofe would probably come and skin you alive personally. Or maybe, you know, maybe they'd get John Ensign to do it, or God help us, Larry Craig.
Well, I wouldn't at this point run as a Democrat anyway. Maybe a Democratic Socialist of America, but not as a member of the Democratic Party, which... You know, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. Back in the day, the Hells Angels talked about one percenters, you know, the filthy few who, you know, kill people. Well, essentially the two parties represent the corporate one percenters, the corporate filthy few, the wealthiest 1% of America. It's very well represented by the two parties. It's the other 99% that's getting the shaft in the behind from the two parties. And, you know, we've come to expect it essentially years ago from the Republican Party. But I just laugh at people who think, like, this was really a big loss anyway. Let's be real. It wasn't like the Democrat was a much better choice, essentially. Yeah, she's not a crazy racist teabagger, but she wasn't a very good
But she was a corporatist Democrat.
Exactly.
And I think that probably explains that 18% of Massachusetts voters who voted for Obama, who decided to vote for, I mean, you know, maybe that, I don't know, maybe that was... Maybe that 18% of Obama voters who voted for Brown were straight women and gay guys and who saw the Cosmo picture. I don't know. I mean, I mean that is no slur to anybody. But that is the vacuous level to which American politics have sunk.
Well, you know, there's always been a long history of handsome men with the people of Massachusetts. So, you know, maybe that's part of the problem is They're a little too hung up.
But
on
then, but then,
after a while, Teddy's looks went away. So.
Yeah, but then to go to, but then to go to his victory party and offer up his daughter, she's available. I'm not kidding. She really is. She's available. Did you hear that?
There's so many jokes I want to use that would just not be appropriate on this form of radio.
I know, and me too. And it's just nothing but a minefield. But to stand there and say that. And this guy's being, and the victory party wasn't even over before the wingnuts were talking about how he had presidential qualities.
You let him run. Yeah, they
it's awful hard to
stay. And I say, bring it on.
Spike, it's awful hard to stay off the bottle sometimes. I tell you, it really, really is. Sometimes I lose that battle. But God, that was a tough one last night.
Hey, and by the way, you were talking about cars a little bit. The saddest part is how more Japanese cars are American made essentially than American cars, and that's been going on for about 20 years. But there's another problem I would like to point out. Even if the current models for the last 15, 20 years of GM cars and even Mopar were made in the United States instead of Brazil, where a lot of that stuff was done, and they're just terrible designs anyways. I mean, that's really what brought GM down. GM was just making crap. I mean, let's be real. I used to be a diehard Pontiac enthusiast. Now I'm a Toyota fanatic. There's a good reason for that. Pontiacs weren't being built like
that. Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's not like Toyota put you on the payroll, Spike.
Right. No, I own Pontiacs, and I own end up with a Toyota Echo, and it's like the indestructible vehicle. I mean, you can just leave it sitting in the winter for eons and go out in one shot. It kicks right over. I mean, they make great stuff. And, you know, a lot of people who are into import cars, you know, it isn't like these are people who have an agenda against America even, you know, either. Plenty of service members are, you know, tune in imports. The problem is the Japanese are the ones making the better product. They're not as hell-bent on making a ridiculous profit by watering down the product because they understand.
Well, they have a different they have a different corporate culture and a different corporate structure back at home, whether it be in Japan or Germany.
Yeah.
And you don't have to plow everything back into the shareholders on that sort of grasshopper equivalent of returns on investment. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a hell of our own making, without a doubt. Hey, Spike, I got to roll though, brother. I'm trying to get through these last few calls without leaving anybody on hold.
All right, man.
All right, see ya. Thanks for calling, man. I hate to cut calls short, but I also hate to leave people hanging. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I'll make this quick. I'm sure because you probably have other callers on the line. So I think the headline of the week is the new pro basketball league is for whites only.
Oh, I saw that.
I think that's my and it was called the I believe it was called the
AABA, wasn't it?
AABA. Yes, and one last thing.
What's it stand for?
The All Aryan Basketball Alliance, of course.
No.
It's the All American Basketball Alliance. But I love the answer. He says
it's also the Asian American Bar Association, but I don't think that's what we're talking about.
There's nothing hatred about what we're doing. I don't hate anyone of color, but people of white American-born citizens are in the minority now. Here's a league for white players to play fundamental basketball, which they like. Fundamental basketball. You couldn't get any better than that. But one last thing. That's amazing what you say about the Proclaimers, because I didn't know that a one-hit wonder with crew cuts and Coke bottle glasses could actually go over to Haiti and transform a nation to follow their way of life. Are they going to make them walk 500 miles?
You know, I don't know. Flesh that out, please.
Proclaimers.
Oh, no. Oh. And I would walk 500 miles.
Yeah.
Oh. That was a barbershop pitch. That one came in close and tight on the inside.
And on that note, I am out of here.
All right, David, you take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Proclaimers. You know, I was reading that, and I'm reading it, and proclaimers. And then David gets it. Man, I'm still sad. Man, that was some chin music on the inside. Yeah, just to follow up on what David mentioned, the All-American Basketball League, it's supposed to be an all-white basketball league, and it's not going to be all-white by excluding persons of color. It's going to be all-white by excluding people who are all by excluding all immigrants. It's the AABA organizer is a guy named Don Moose Lewis. And here's the poll quote. It has come to the attention of the principals of the All-American Basketball Alliance that white basketball players are essentially shut out of conventional professional basketball due to the proliferation of non-organized play on the court. Huh? With players on other professional teams carrying guns, attacking fans in the stands, and going through the motions of playing the game, fundamentally sound white players are a vanishing species. You know, I want these guys to get up and running. And I want their champion to take on the worst team in the NBA and let them play by the AABA's rules. And here's hoping that the Clippers or whoever, I don't really follow NBA basketball, just beat the snot out of the Whitey League. Quick email before we roll out of here. This coming in, an update from our buddy Robert in Japan. He says, by the way, he says it's rainy in Kyushu today, or Akita, Kyushu. He says, I got to respond about the voodoo in Haiti. The idea of God blessing a country or cursing a country because of particular beliefs, opinions of people is sheer nonsense. The Philippines is a strictly Roman Catholic country, and poverty, misery, theft, and corruption is so commonplace it's normal. But take Japan, whereby people go to Shinto shrines, a religion that has numerous gods and heroes, and people go to fortune tellers on a routine basis, and yet it's the second economy in the world. So people have to get this into their heads. God either does not exist or does care about the state of a nation's economy or a person's wealth because of his or opinions or practices. Only one or the other. It is only in a culture of honesty and a morality of fairness does wealth and happiness come about. Not because of God. The third world is often the third world because of the endless corruption. And as for earthquakes, we have our fair share even here. You can't wish or pray those away. But think about it, Bob. If prayer did work, what a hell it would be here. Why work? Just pray for money. In time, no one would work. There would be no hospitals, as everyone would just pray. Nothing would be produced. No diseases would be cured. The economy would soon go to hell if even 50% of all prayers were answered. Just my two bits, says Robert in Kita, Kyushu, Japan. Yeah, see, that's what happens when you start running up against that reason and common sense stuff. And finally this, to close out the evening with just a little soupçon of outrage and a reminder, no show for me tomorrow night. Maybe somehow or another we can restream what WOWK is picking up for the Horn audience. I frankly don't care about WOWK or whatever Charleston station it is. They're all owned by coal. So what? You know, I'm sure by now, and maybe we ought to take a little more time with this on Friday and give it the attention it deserves. You know that Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska has been active in trying to gut the Clean Air Act and prevent any regulation of carbon dioxide, otherwise known as greenhouse gas pollution. All through this thing, it has been mentioned that there was an unnamed Democratic senator working with her. In light of the conversation that took place earlier in the evening about phony Democrats, you might be interested to know that the unnamed Democratic senator is Mary Landrieu. She has admitted that she is the one collaborating with Lisa Murkowski to ram the Dirty Air Act down America's throat. This is the senator who represents the Mississippi Delta area, Louisiana. And she's the one working against her own constituents to put more poison into the air. This from David about the AABA, the All-American Basketball Alliance. I want those can't jump MFers to take on the Lady Vols once they have their pink or white champions. See, there's all kinds of alternatives here. So that's it for prayer meeting tonight. Sure has been fun, and it's been busy, too. Thanks for all the calls. You know, you make these shows a delight when you do that, because the conversations are so wonderful to me. I hope they are for you as well. And I'm sorry to say this. I have to say this. It is the 20th day of January, and we are well past the halfway mark of January, and we are nowhere near the halfway mark of our monthly fundraising goal. And so I ask, because we are literally month to month, if you can, please support the Horn. Don't think I don't know what's going on in Haiti. Hell, if I could, I'd be down there broadcasting from there and trying to get some truth out. No can do. But if you can help support the Horn, it is badly needed on an ongoing basis, and it will be much and sincerely appreciated by all of us who put our efforts into bringing these shows along. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, and there is also a snail mail address there under the Contribute tab. If you can, please use it. Thanks, of course, to everyone who makes this happen, our chat room moderators, Lottie and ELO, also known as Sue. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks always go out to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, and thanks to John Fox for sitting in for me last night while I was playing hooky. An excellent job as usual. Thanks, John. And thanks go out always to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Since 2002, WhiteRoseSociety.org has been basically holding the line, holding the rope for liberal radio in America. It's a heck of a lot of work and a heck of a lot of hours. Thank you, Ben. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know. I will be in their good company tomorrow evening in Charleston. That's the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch and Coal River Wind, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Calls going into the station.
Well, the station. Okay, no.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Remember how, I guess it was Monday night since I played hooky last night. You remember how Monday night Kevin from Brooklyn said, I just can't imagine the voters of Massachusetts will put that wing nut in there or something to that effect. And I said, Kevin, I really, really, really want you to be right and me to be wrong. Well, sorry, Kevin. That really sucked. And among the things that sucked was the fact that Martha Coakley, as Brad Friedman noted, gave up faster than any other human being conceding an election in the election history, with the possible exception of the guy who ran against Saddam. And that's pretty quick. I don't know if you have had enough of the recriminations and the hand-wringing for today. Your phone calls will tell me that. But I have. Early today over on Facebook, and by all means friend up and participate in the discussion as we post things throughout the day. Feel free to. It's one way to sort of keep the show going 24/7, if you will. I posted a link to a Wall Street Journal. Remind me to talk about the New York Times, clueless bastards. Wall Street Journal opinion piece by Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis, former special counsel to President Clinton from 1996 to 1998. There's no basically to it. It's a matter of what he did or did not do. And what he did is he penned an editorial op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal, that right-wing rag. I mean, it is. I mean, it just is. So, one, why Lanny Davis is writing for the Wall Street Journal is subject to question. Any port in a storm, I guess. But the title of the piece was "Blame the Left for Massachusetts," and the subheading, and of course, you know, you don't necessarily get to title your op-eds, but still, the subhead was "Democrats should be willing to seek common ground reforms." And I read that before the first cup of decaf this morning, and it was no good. Peter Godbold once swore to me that he would not respond to anything before he had his decaf. Well, I probably should not read anything before I have my decaf, because I was Yosemite Sam and all over this studio. Blag, stag, and blue nose, not pull, frazzleack, and breck, slap, wasn't it, nothing? The nerve of Lanny Davis to suggest that it is the fault of Democrats that Martha Coakley did not win that election. The nerve. He asks a question in this, and frankly, I think this goes beyond, well beyond, the issue of whose fault the Brown-Coakley election was. He says, according to polls, fears about the Democrats' health care proposal played a prominent role in Mr. Brown's victory yesterday. In the last several months, the minority congressional Republicans have dominated the message on health care and stamped on the Democratic Party the perception that we stand for big government, higher taxes, and health insecurity when it comes to Medicare. How is that possible? Lanny Davis asks. And I don't think it was rhetorical.
I think he really doesn't understand. How is that possible, he writes. The Democrats have a simple message on health care that still has not really gotten through. If our bill passes, you never have to worry about getting or losing health insurance for the rest of your life. How is that so? How is it that so few people have heard that message? And he goes on through the rest of the screed to blame Democrats for why it is that people, no, not Democrats, to blame the left for why it is people have not gotten that message. Well, if you will pardon me for just a moment, and we'll move forward after this, because there's a ton of stuff for prayer meeting tonight.